Good morning. Committee will come to order. First item on our agenda is School Facility Department. Bill, welcome. Senator Landon, it's good to see you this morning with your Natrona County red tie. Senator Perkins has got his Merry Christmas tie on, by the way. So we got Natrona County ready to go. It's good to be seen. We're going to take all the time we need, Bill. This is a very important subject and issue for us. And what I'd like to have you do, you've got a bill and the different things to talk about, but I'd like to have you give us an overview. And, of course, one of the
Mr. Chairman, because you'll be taking votes today, could we take roll just to Senator Dockstetter?
Here.
Senator Hastert?
Here.
Senator Meyer?
Excused.
Senator Perkins?
Here.
Representative Flickery?
Excused.
Representative Burkhart?
Here.
Representative Esquivel? Representative Moniz?
Here.
Representative Nicholas?
Excused.
Representative Stepson?
Here.
Co-Chairman Harshman?
Here.
Chairman Bebout?
Excused.
Thank you. You have a quorum.
Here. Okay, thanks. Yeah, we will have a vote. So what I'd like to have you do is talk about the projects, anything that you want to discuss with us. And one of the issues we've talked about, and we've talked about it so much, but it's still so very important, is the amount of money that we have out there. And, Bill, you can sure speak to this as well. And I get those monthly, or I think they're monthly reports I get, and I pay close attention to those, and you can see the amount of money that we've appropriated, the amount of money in the pipeline, so to speak, the amount of money we have on contracts, and the amount of money that we have spent. And you can look at, and I like the format because we still got money. Well, we pretty much spent 2012 and 13. I mean, we're still trying to spend 13, 14 money, and now we're going into 15, 16. So some of those things, the committee, you've seen those reports that shows the amount of money and where it is and what projects are going. And so an overview on that, the last time I checked, I think we had about $1.2 billion, $1.3 billion in the pipeline, and contracts for maybe $700-900 million, and actually work going on and spent about $300-400 million. But those kind of numbers, Bill, if you could share that with us. And with that, the floor is yours. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe before I start, I can have the chairman of the Select Committee of School Facilities, Senator Bill Landon, speak a little bit to that issue and to how the program's going over the
last year. Absolutely. Senator Landon, welcome.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just real quickly this morning, maybe a 30,000-foot view, you touched on a couple of things that I was going to touch on this morning. But I do appreciate the opportunity to come in front of Appropriations. I know you've had a long week and you're trying to get finished up this morning. I want to get you to the director. Let me just say up front that I think I speak on behalf of the Select Committee. Former Chairman Harshman obviously is going to have a perspective this morning, which I appreciate. But I think I speak for the committee in saying we really like where we're at now. I'll take you back a couple of years, and you remember committee that we found ourselves. The best analogy that I can give is that we kind of had the vehicle in four low. We had an awful lot of projects that were backed up, and I'm really pleased to say that through the commission and the facilities department that we've gotten things moving. There's a lot of activity out there, a lot of projects on the ground, and we've done a great job as a state of addressing condition and capacity. So, generally speaking, I think the Select Committee likes where we are. We're concerned about the future just like you are, and in respect to two different things. One is revenue, but the other thing we'll talk about a little bit this morning is this whole idea of 25 million square feet of buildings out there, many of which have been put on the ground in the last 5 to 6 to 8 years, and how do we take care of them? We want to talk about asset management, and the Select Committee spent a lot of time talking about component funding, major maintenance funding, and, of course, capital construction. And you throw those all three of those together, the state of Wyoming does as good a job as any state in the nation at taking care of its school buildings. Well, now that we've got them, we want to make sure we take care of them. So that's another issue as we go forward. I think that's a forward-thinking thing. I want to just run through real quickly. The Select Committee spent some time on construction costs and inflation. We talked value engineering. As I mentioned, we sought a long-term view for asset preservation. The director will talk about that in a minute. We talked about adequacy standards because what we call adequacy plays into what those buildings are going to cost going forward. We had an extensive discussion related to security in our schools, and we'll talk about that this morning, too. So I want to get you to the director, Mr. Chairman, but that's kind of the 30,000-foot view. As I mentioned, I think the Select Committee is happy to bring you a pretty modest supplemental request this morning. We'll go through that bill in a little bit. So,
any questions of Senator Landon? Any questions? Bill, I had a couple, and I'm looking at the November update, and we have the total appropriation available is $1.26 billion. And the estimated budget, which is, I think is a good thing, is $1.3 billion. So we're about $46 million over budget in terms of what we appropriated relative to some surprises we might have had along the way. We've awarded about $900,000 to date, and we've got $453 million that's out there that we haven't bid or done anything. And then, of course, we've got, when you go into the individual years, you can see how much has actually been spent. And 11 and 12 were pretty well spent up and up to speed on 11, 12, 13, and 14 were quite a bit behind. So could you talk, or maybe that's for you, Bill, to discuss that and where we are in that big scheme of things of the money, how it flows. One of the things that we had a lot of concerns about is that we're competing against ourselves. And we've talked about that, and I know we had an unusual situation. By the way, I think you handled it very well over in Albany County with that school, where the bids came in and just blew us out of the water. And then, yet we've had situations where, like when we bid a school in Fremont County, I think it might have been Shoshone even, where we had very, very competitive bids under the amount that you thought about. So if you could speak to that whole issue before you get into your general remarks, I'd appreciate it.
I'll let you go ahead and grab that.
Or Bill, either one of you.
Mr. Chairman, I'll defer to the director. I think that much of what we're talking about in terms of spending on schools is going to kind of self-correct, and we'll go through that in a little bit here. But as I mentioned, we're, as a state, we've caught up a long ways on condition and capacity, and I think that's going to shift us down in the next year or two anyway. But I'm going to defer to the director and maybe come back in on the conversation in a minute. So,
go ahead, Bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to see all of you. It's been a while, so it's good to see all of you. It's been a busy year for us in the School Facilities Commission and Department, and some of the comments that I have today will sort of reflect a little bit of that and how busy we are. I also understand that there are some the Joint Appropriations Committee's membership will be changing over the next session, and some of the new members are here. So if it's okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to take a little bit of time to talk about context and then get right into the cash flow and move
absolutely
on.
Okay. You know, we want to hear anything that you want to discuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the Wyoming School Facility Department currently manages about 1,600 separate buildings consisting of, as you had said earlier, 25 million square feet across the state of Wyoming. And the majority of the square footage is actually educational buildings. About 408 of those buildings, of those 1,600, are educational buildings and represent 21 million of those square feet. So the vast majority are educational facilities, and the vast majority of square feet that we manage, that the legislature and the administration manages, is educational facilities. For comparison, this asset is approximately three times the space found within the University of Wyoming. So it gives you a little bit of a scale and some understanding about the size of the asset that we're talking about. Over the last 12 years, the state's invested about $3.5 billion in the repair and replacement of K-12 public schools, and the investment is significant, particularly if one looks at the public funding in light of the number of students served and practices in other states. With a student population of about 90,000, and it changes every year, Wyoming ranks in the top three for spending on state facilities, at the state level in the United States. So we're in the top three, and we actually, by other indicators, rise up to number one pretty quickly. So we're doing very well and have been doing very well. And the program that you have developed over the last few years has been very successful. So that on a national level, from comparing ourselves to the other states, we're doing very well.
Bill, I want to ask you one question about a thing you just mentioned. You said that you have three times the space as a university in terms of just overall space for education. But we've got 10 times as many people, kids in that space. Is that correct? Is that what you told me?
Yeah, I'm not sure of the population of the University of Wyoming.
About
I'm sure you are. 11,000. We have about 90,000 students.
So three times as much physical space and 10 times as many students. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Over the last year, the Department Commission has been working diligently to stabilize the operations of the School Facilities Department, and the reengineering has driven us to strengthen our relationships within the legislature, the body here, and all of the other legislators, school districts, and the contracting community. I was just commenting to the governor last night that I just finished the tour of all 48 school districts last month. My last one was Big Piney, and it has been a great educational experience for me, and I didn't understand until I finished that how diverse Wyoming was and how diverse the communities were. We are Wyoming. We are one Wyoming, but we also are made up of lots of different parts. And the communities are very different. Even communities right next to one another are very different in terms of their history and values and legacy and things that are important.
I'm not going to say.
Okay.
I think Mr. Director, I think he might be referring to Pavilion Shoshone.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but close by, but very different. So,
Mr. Chairman, you had mentioned this earlier. You know, with the change in the construction market over the last year, the department has been challenged to find ways to continue to move projects forward. Every project in the state of Wyoming is moving forward right now. Not one of them has stopped, even in this market condition. And over the last 6 months, the department, school districts, architects, and the building community, the contracting community, have worked together to find innovative solutions to the problems by delivering the quality education facilities you expect when you appropriated the funds. Let me stop there for a second and talk about the market conditions, because I'm asked this question frequently. Right now, 50% of the projects are bidding at or under budget. About 50% of the projects are bidding over budget. Every project that's bid over budget gets assigned a team. Many of them are behind me here. We have a number of our staff here. Some of those that you're familiar with, Stan Hobbs, George Galita, our new deputy director, Lauren Fodor. These are all folks that work with the Attorney General's office, go out to the school districts, and work with them at redesigning these projects, doing more value engineering, looking at phasing, looking at sharpening our pencil. And in every single case, we've come up with a solution that have kept those projects moving forward. I would also say that we've begun the analysis of that effort and tried to make a determination of how much value is coming from those efforts for those projects that are over budget. We're seeing we've only completed the study of three. We're seeing an immediate savings of 8% on average throughout that. And of the three, we studied $7 million in savings. So that's another elementary school to us. And so we're going to continue to do that. And that's just the first three. We have many, many that we've done this with. And over the next month or so, we'll study the rest of them to make sure we understand completely what value we're adding by doing the kind of reengineering that is necessary for those projects that are bidding over budget. But again, 50% are bidding at or under, 50% over. It's working. The program is working where we go out and engage the school districts directly to keep the projects moving, again, as expected by this legislature.
You know, Bill, one of the things that just being an engineer, listening to what you just said, there's got to be a reason that the 50% are over and 50% are under. It's either got to be, you know, the matter of competition, competing against ourselves and the subs and the contractors bidding higher because there's a lot of work out there, or it's got to be that some of the schools are having more something in them than the other schools aren't. I mean, there's a logical reason why it's happening. I like how you're dealing with it, but what's the root of the problem? Why is it happening? That would be my question.
Mr. Chairman, that's a great question, and I'm asked that a lot. There is analyzing, and we did a forensic analysis on each time a project has gone over, as our teams engage the district, we have to figure out what happened. And every single time we found non-repeatable conditions, sets of conditions. There hasn't been one project sets of conditions that have been the same from one project to another. Certainly we have found on that group of projects, that handful of projects, we found some patterns, but sometimes it's regional, sometimes it's timing, sometimes it's subs, sometimes it's estimating, sometimes it's the design. Sometimes it's the siting of the facility. It's sited in a particular place, which requires something that we don't bid well on. It's a variety of different things, and I've not seen a pattern yet, a repeatable pattern. So to lay it at any one place, certainly, though, there is an effect. I mean, we have, as we had talked about earlier, Mr. Chairman, we have a lot of money on the market, on the street right now, about $500 million on the street. That's the most that's ever been on the street, and that's because we're clearing that backlog of appropriations that had been in place. And with that amount, it does have some effect, but it's not repeatable because we're finding some to say, when we thought it was that, some had said, no, just retime it, bid it 2 months from now, and we'll be fine, and we'll bid it, and we saw it fall. We saw the numbers fall by the kinds of percentages that we're talking about. So I'm hard-pressed to tell you that it's one thing or another. I'm not seeing that, and we're studying these as closely as anyone in the state, and we can't find a pattern. It's like all things with capital, it's a variety of different things in combination at that moment in time that is causing this problem with, only 50% of the projects.
Yeah, I'm going to yield to the co-chair, but the thing that you should be able to find out, and I think you're on the right track, is as you continue to do that, there will be patterns that come up. You know, and there's a lot of things, and I can almost put down a list of what you'll – I think you can see that, and you'll find some patterns, and I think you'll be on top of that. Mr. Co-chair.
Just thank you, Mr. Chairman. About the 50% that are under, really the same question. Why are they under?
Right.
I mean, is it to be from overestimating to where they're at, those kind of things, what type of project they are?
Thank you, Mr.
You mentioned that the ones that are over are about 8% over, or you've saved 8%. I'm assuming to get them down to budget. So how about those ones that are under? How much are we under and those kind of things?
That's a great question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The idea of the over and the under, we studied that. When they're over, they're over a lot. They're over 20%, 17%. One was 38% over. They're over. When they're at or under, they're under by single-digit percentages. It's very small, and it's about right. It's what we... When we look at that situation, we say, this bid was correct. We had a lot of bidders. They were very tight. It was either at or right under, single digit, 2%, 3% under, something very close. Why? And we look at that, and again, it's an unrepeatable pattern. It's the timing. It's the estimating was correct. They have and in some cases, the contractors and the subcontractors have great relationships, built-in relationships where they can make those adjustments based on that kind of project. We've got the right estimating going on. And, one of the things that we found is, you had said earlier that we had saved 8% on average on the three that we had studied recently to see the value
of
that.
That's what you had said, yeah.
Yeah. The overages were much, much higher, and so we are having to come forward with a small request for some additional unanticipated fund to help deal with this market, and I'll talk about that when we get into the budget discussion.
Mr. Chairman, how much then is, just location in Wyoming? We have such a unique thing. I mean, Casper's kind of got its own group of contractors that are pretty close in there, and then you've got all these bordering areas where there's some population, obviously Evanston and Utah and those things, but... like Rollins High School, for example, that came in over, and maybe you can update us on that one. But,
sure.
You think about the electrical sub who got that job, or it was it's different. They don't just drive back and forth from Casper every day. They're going to go over there and spend the night. They're going to pay their workers per diem. I mean, it's going to cost more than wiring in a school in Casper where these guys are home every night, those kind of things. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, I can speak
location.
About, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I can speak about the geography a little bit. It's fascinating, frankly. We're seeing some pressure relief in the southwest. We're seeing pressure relief in the southeast. Rollins is in the seam. It's right in there. So I can't draw from Salt Lake, and I can't draw from Denver. So we're seeing a bit of a seam in there, and it's tough in Rollins. And as you proceed north, geographically, if you proceed north up into Casper, the seam continues. I mean, it's tough to get there. And then we start having the competition with the energy economy. And so we start to run into that a little bit. But that, remember, that's unique to all these areas. That's what I mean by it's non-repeatable across the state. We're looking for the factors, and we understand the factors, I think, better, and so we can come up with a solution, but the factors are so unique. We thought we would get pressure relief in the Northeast, but because of what's going on in North Dakota, South Dakota, we're not picking that up. We're now picking it up because oil prices are starting to drop. We're actually seeing some of those contractors coming back into the market, and we actually awarded something recently to one. We thought we would have a lot of pressure relief on the north from Montana. We're getting nothing out of Montana. We're not getting many bids, or we're not getting any response from Montana. So you're correct to say that there is a geographical effect. And some of these communities, particularly communities like Rollins, you know, we just finished a project up in Hanna. These are in these seams, and depending upon the size of the project and how much demand we're going to put on our subs and our contractors, we see that materialize. You know, we see that realized, that predisposition realized. And the smaller schools, not so much, but the big ones like Rollins, tough. And that one was tough to put together. We're back on track on that project.
Mr. Chairman, just one more. Just, you know, we see this, and we saw it with the Capitol, and we see it on some of these projects. I've talked with you about this before, but you get some guys kind of fenced out, and I worry about that with Wyoming guys. You put in these prequals that you have to have done a $50 or $100 million project in the last 2 years, and, you know, all those kind of things. But YDOT does a thing where they pre-qualify people, and they have their list of folks, and they trust, they know they've gone through that, and it speeds up the process. We've talked about that with facilities. Have we made any progress on that or pursued any pre-qualifying people?
We have. The first is that we're seeing a good mix of inside, outside, and outside state and inside state. The vast majority are inside state, and we have double-digit in the teens percentages of outside participating. So there's not an overwhelming participation from the outside in both our contracting and subs. But there is a participation, and it's noticeable. But the vast majority of both contracting and subs are going to Wyoming companies. And so the program that you've set up for contractor preference and those kinds of things is working generally speaking, at least in our particular situation. That's not to say that we hadn't listened to some of the conversations that we had before and are always looking to improve it. And so we've been meeting with the Contractors Association and others around the state, the professional associations, to be able to understand that and how it's working. And also the governor has asked me to start meeting with ANI and start meeting with DOD and start meeting with the other Capitol building, the University of Wyoming, to start to talk about how we can share our programs and our understanding, and that includes things like pre-qual with DOT. So the governor has really been forward at saying, get out there and let's start to work with other agencies that are doing similar things, and we've been doing that and meeting with them. And to date, we are sharing things. For instance, ANI is now using our online bidding system that we developed in SFD, and they think it's great. And so we're going to start sharing that kind of technique and methodology, technology across these agencies that are doing all of this capital work throughout the state of Wyoming, and that includes a conversation about pre-qual.
Okay, Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Panos, the biggest issue I'm hearing from frustrated parents is capacity issues. Mm-hmm. They move into a new development, live three blocks away from a school, and their kids are getting bused across town. Capacity issues.
Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, as you know, the complexity of what is going on in our planning, our design, and our construction involves great partnerships, and our partnerships with the school districts are critical to that. The way that the program is set up here in the state of Wyoming is that there is a great deal of local control over decisions about where students go and their programming in those schools and their grade levels that they assign to those schools. And they change. They change over time. And they change also because populations change in different parts of communities. For instance, in this particular school district, I think Laramie 1, Representative Escobel, is what you were referring to. In Laramie 1, we recently changed, we thought we were going to build some additional square footage at a school. I'm going to ask my staff to remind me the name of the school so I don't get it wrong. Do you remember the school? Gilcrest? At Gilcrest Elementary School, which is out on Happy Jack Road by the base. And but they needed, because the base had increased some of its population, its soldiers, by I think 270 or something like that, they actually needed that square footage to be reassigned to Freedom Elementary, and we moved it. So there's movement that happens that is really our response to school districts wanting flexibility. And so I'm not surprised to hear the parents see, hey, my children were in this particular condition last year, and in this condition this year, they're being bused somewhere else. That is not untypical, and happens in Casper and happens in some of the other communities at the neighborhood level. So we work with the school districts. In fact, I met with the Laramie School District Board in their planning session a week ago. I really do enjoy meeting with school boards, especially in their planning sessions, when they can get they get an education, and I get an education about their district, but they get an education about what the state programs are like. We talked about that, and we talked about how that creates disruption in neighborhoods, and trying to work with our planning staff, Stan's here and Troy, those are our planning guys in our department, and they work with those school districts to try and get that in balance and keep that so that it's not so severe as we go forward. But change will occur, especially as populations change, and frankly as programming changes in the various schools that we have.
Further? Okay, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a result of the work of the department over the last year, we've decreased our supplemental requests significantly as compared to the two prior supplemental requests. In 2011, we requested $183 million in our supplemental request. In 2013, we requested $209 million in our supplemental request. And in 2015, this year, we're requesting approximately $21 million in additional funds. We listened to the legislature last session. Your bill, the design of the bill, the budget bill for this department, allowed us to bring these kinds of requests down. And so we're happy to do that. We also, the request focuses on a number of things that we also heard from the legislature. The governor's supplemental budget request is divided into three parts. The first is reporting our planned expenditures in the second year of the biennium. This was required by the biennium, by the biennial budget bill, something new for us, and we were happy to do it. The second is our request for additional funding, and the additional funding is only related to health and safety and a couple of needed improvements to our formula-driven allocations. And let me explain what I mean by that as we go forward, but one of them is the market. Changing, slightly increasing, or slightly requesting an increase for our unanticipated fund, which we use as part of the solution when we're dealing with those projects that are over budget. We're coming up with a number of solutions to phase and to do VE and to re-engineer, and sometimes because of all these changes, we'll have to inject a little bit of unanticipated. Well, because of the market conditions, it's a little higher than our normal 4%, I think, we put on the appropriation, and this will bring it up to about 6.7%. So we only ask for about 2.7% more, which equates to about $6.7 million, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. And then finally, the third part of our request is for early implementation of some of the funding, such as those needed for security, school security upgrades, which we are aggressively moving forward with. So we've also included in your documentation reports that were due and were done on time and on budget.
Okay, before we get into that, Bill, I had another question just about the how we're able to get the job done with the limitation of contractors. And my numbers aren't quite right. I'm trying to remember in the top of my head. Mr. Co-Chair can maybe help me out. But like in Natrona, I think we've got $250, $270 million worth of schools and construction activity there, yet we've only spent maybe $50 million. Do you see any issues there in being able to spend the other $200 million in a timely manner? And does that have any effect on the rest of the state, in just in terms of the competing against ourselves?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the question. I'm not seeing any structural problem within the system now. A year ago today, we had an $800 million backlog. That same backlog is a couple of hundred million today, and it'll probably be zero by the end of the fiscal year. We're putting out a million a day, and it's moving through the system pretty well. The projects, particularly those in Natrona, and it's not just the amount of money, it's just the number of projects that are going on up there, are unique. But that's not the only place we have complexity. I mean, you mentioned earlier Laramie High School in Albany 1 School District. That one is very complex. The siting work alone that you see going on the freeway as you pass by is extremely complex, and Rollins was extremely complex. And so as we get into these larger number of projects and, frankly, the more complex projects, they're always challenging, but I don't see a structural problem right now. So with that, I'd like, if it's okay, and I'm trying to remember back a year ago, I was reflecting with Senator Landon, Chairman Landon, how you wanted to proceed through the budget, Mr. Chairman. We could go page by page, or we could just speak in general about it. It's up to you.
Well, before we do, you've given us this reports, safety standards, and then also the update. Do you want to speak to the handout a little bit and kind of go through that? What's the pleasure of the committee? I'd like to hear some information on the report and talk about that. Senator Landon, I think that'd be appropriate to talk a little bit about this.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think you're specifically pointing to safety and security. Is that what you just held up there?
Yeah, Senator Landon, we've got security standards for K-12, and then we got adequacy standards. Just to touch on both those reports a little bit, some of the highlights in case the committee has any questions. We got this morning, but I think if you could give us an overview, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. Let me just start by saying, just to reflect back a year and a half ago, you might remember that we, in the budget bill, we set
actually aside, you sent that out to us in October, so we've had it.
Yeah.
I misspoke.
Yeah. Needless to say, safety and security, Mr. Chairman, has been on everybody's mind with regard to schools, and the Select Committee spent quite a bit of time on that, but let me back you up to a little over a year ago, and then into the budget session, you'll remember we set aside $9 million in our budget, and we wanted that budget to get on the ground right away, and so that's why it'll be reflected in this supplemental request that these funds be made available immediately upon passage of the bill, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but obviously, we wanted to get started right away on safety and security, and I understand that the school facilities department has already met with. We had some bids come in on some folks that will help us to get out there and analyze our school facilities across the state, and we're going to really try to put some energy into safety and security. So that's a little bit of a back look, and then up to this point, and I'll just let the director take over from there on safety and security.
Yeah, and a question about that. I know, and you're on Education Committee, correct?
That's Bill? Correct.
And I know there's an SRO bill out there, I think, that is moving. Is it a committee bill?
Yeah, that is a committee bill.
And could you speak to that relative to this report, and if there's any, I mean, did this help with that SRO bill that was just coming forward? Are they related at all?
Well, I think that all of these security measures are going to all come together, and so related, yes. But what we're looking at the school facilities level, Mr. Chairman, are more, what we've been talking about is everything from video to outside entrances to the front of our schools. This is a more structural look where the Joint Education Committee is going to come to the legislature with more of a look at inside those buildings and with resource officers. So a little bit different, but I think they're all going to fit together. Obviously, it's a very important topic, and I think that the facility part of it plays a huge role. And so I'm going to let the director speak a little bit more specifically about what's going on there. But,
yeah, and when you do, there's been a lot of terrible things, tragedies in our country at schools. And I guess one of the things I always wondered is if there's some kind of a common denominator and some of those schools really had thought about security and done a lot of things, but it didn't make any difference. or if some of them are really lax, you know, what is there any kind of a way, and some of those things are just so tragic in the way they come together, I'm not sure you could have ever prevented them. Well, when you've looked at this whole issue, did you bring that into consideration, some of the tragedy that occurred and how? I know we had one, we've had one situation in Wyoming over in the western part of the state quite a few years ago, but since then we really haven't. So maybe you could speak to that as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you're right. And sitting here speaking as somebody who has been through a pretty tragic incident on one of our college campuses, I'm not going to misrepresent anything to any of you. It doesn't matter how much we do. There's always going to be an opportunity for somebody who's out of their mind to do something terrible. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do everything we can do. And, for example, when we talked about school resource officers, I'm not sure it would have mattered if we'd have had three or four more security officers on the Casper College campus. It wasn't going to prevent, you know, what happened that day on that campus up in my neck of the woods. And that said, I think that school resource officers are a good topic for us to discuss in the next couple of months. And I think that that we can make our schools a little more secure. Facilities, same thing. If somebody wants to get into a facility, they probably have a way to find out how to do it. We just want to make it as difficult as possible for people like that to find their way into a school. I think there's no question these conversations are going on nationwide. At that college campus that I just referenced, Mr. Chairman, we discovered a lot of things. And in the security report, you'll find them. The work of Director Panos and his staff is spot on. Things like being able to lock doors from the inside. Things like, you know, stopping people at that front entrance. But the other part that I'm not going to misrepresent is that it's going to be very expensive. I mean, if we're going to go out across the state and try to address major security issues in these buildings, it's going to be a costly endeavor.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you for that, Senator Lynn. Mr. Chairman, we're engaged in a fairly aggressive program with Homeland Security, Wyoming Department of Education, the Attorney General's Office, in deploying the school security effort that was articulated by the legislature and the administration last session. We meet regularly with that group, and there was a task force that was formed, and then working groups that came off of that. And the program that we're developing, as Senator Landon pointed out, is risk mitigation, not elimination. We can eliminate some, but we can't eliminate all. We can mitigate all, and we're going to try to do our best with it. The program was divided into really bifurcated into two parts. The first part I always refer to as the most difficult one, which is being handled primarily by Homeland Security and the Education Committee and others, which is the internal functioning of a security and a risk management program, the training, the SROs, the drills, the response times, the communications, all of those things that are very, very difficult to deploy and very difficult to manage on a consistent basis across all of the entire system on a regular basis. The second part of the program was really the physical planning and development. And that's what we took on in the School Facilities Commission and Department. And with the approach that the legislature had allowed us to do, we were able to have some money set aside to first do a study of guidelines, to develop new guidelines, and to develop our guidelines based on that experience that has happened across the nation, and update those guidelines, and then get an estimate about how long it would take to assess the entire system against those guidelines and how much that would cost. And that's the report that you have in front of you. It was due in October. It was done in October, and so we have that report in front of you today. I would say that we have been, as I said, aggressive at moving forward. One of the other things that the legislature has allowed us to do as well is to set $9 million aside to begin some of those corrective actions now, and that's part of the supplemental request. And part of the early implementation money that we've requested here today was so that we can get started on some of those projects in March as opposed to July. And that will be in parallel with the actual assessment of all of the 25 million square feet, which will go on here. And, in fact, we have just finished our interviews of the finalists for that yesterday. Let me just make one comment about our approach here. Usually government is forward-looking. When we look at an asset this large, we generally look forward. We try and figure out what do we need to spend a year out, 2 years out, 4 years out. It is very rare that we look rearward, that we look backward, and we say, that entire system that we've been building over the last few biennia, we want to change it in some way. When you do that, when any state legislature does that, it is an expensive proposition. So that's what's unique about this, is it doesn't happen very often. But this is the subject, I think, that the legislature and the administration says we need to have that happen on. And so we are looking back at this entire system. We're going to assess the system. It'll only take 6 months, and we'll have a number for you for the next biennial budget consideration and actually for the governor's budget as we approach the spring and summer of next year. So our timing is what we had talked about before. We are on track. We are going to get the number. We're going to be able to do the assessment. We've got the guideline in place. We're ready to go. And so along with our partners in Homeland Security who are working on, you know, and by the way, that seems very linear, right? You have a guideline, you assess the condition, you get a bill, you bring that bill forward, you fill the gap, and you move forward. That's very linear, as opposed to my partners over in Homeland Security and Department of Education and the others that have this very complicated set of circumstances about retraining people and drills
and
first response and all of that, which is not a linear concept. It's a multilateral concept. And so we're going to continue to work in partnership with all the other state agencies to get this done as quickly as possible. The governor is obviously fully committed to this and has been very supportive of it as we've moved through the process. And so I think that's the report you see in front of you. You'll see another report after that that is going to be a full assessment of the entire system against these guidelines and a gap analysis to give you an idea about what it will take to bring the school facilities up to the guideline that's been expressed here.
Okay, any other questions? Yeah. Go ahead, Representative Thompson.
Mr. Chairman and Director Panos, looking at that $9 million, has there been any discussion or is there any opportunity to leverage those dollars with dollars already in the school districts? I know, you know, our district has been looking at some of these issues and had a bond issue that went down in flames that was going to address some of these. But it seems like, given the efforts among individual districts, there's some coordination going on and the ability to capitalize on local efforts as well.
Bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stepson, thank you for the question. The entire effort around the $9 million is a fully integrated concept. The dollars that are actually coming forward from the $9 million, we are drawing from our existing list of component projects or minor capital projects that were identified as being consistent with the guideline. We drew them out of that body of work, and so that's work we would have already have done. We just drew it up earlier and then funded it a little bit earlier, so it's integrated in that way. The second way that it's integrated is we continue to do security upgrades at all of our new facilities consistent with these guidelines. Now, we'll go back and check, but they're very consistent. So all of our capital programs, all of the money that's on the street right now, will be the security parts of those projects, whether they be a renovation or a new building, will have these security guidelines integrated with them. So we are leveraging the existing resources, and that just keeps the momentum going because we did not want to say we need a separate program. We wanted to say we're going to integrate these security upgrades into our existing program, and that was the basis of our entire strategy. Thank you for the question.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. As you go through the analysis and just looking at your report a little bit, I mean, you broke them down into various things like site and perimeter, video surveillance, building systems, egress and refuge, things like that. You know, and just kind of relating that to a court security, a very, very much more modest court security evaluation that came to us earlier this week, you know, there are as you go through the analysis, you're going to look at those things that can be done fairly quickly and rapidly and cheaply that provide that effect. And then there's, you know, and it goes from that gamut to what you could do, you know, by having a janitor change a door lock in a day kind of a thing to to those things that really will be designed into buildings. Are you going to break that down and provide that for us in some kind that, so we can figure out how to eat this elephant one bite at a time?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, thank you again for the question. In fact, we are going to do exactly that. We're going to base our corrective actions as we figure out where the gaps are. The gaps aren't, it isn't black or white. It's a series of grays, shades of gray as we go through, and they're based on risk. And so we will take the easiest things to do that generate the best benefit towards managing risk first, and then move down through. And each school will be different. That's the complexity of looking backward, is that every school is in a different place, and some may have these automated locks already in, and they don't need that. They need the next level. I've been to some schools. The story I like to tell is our school out in one of our rural schools. The key for the school is actually down the street at the town tavern, and that's how you get into this school. And so we're going to stop things like those are easy things that we can correct. All the way to some schools are very well equipped and have armoring on some of the glass and some of the other things. And so we have the full gamut of schools, and so we have to take this a bit at a time and do it based on risk and what will generate the most risk benefit as we go forward. Thank you for the question.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to add real quickly to the senator. That was a good question, and I think you might recall last year we added a school to the list in our budget bill over east of here, and that's a good example of this big spectrum that we're going to be looking at. We've got schools that you can just put some different windows in or different locks on doors or whatever and really gain a lot of risk management there. But then you have a school like over in the southeast corner of the state that we realized that we really needed to move up the list. And one of the reasons was, do you remember in testimony that we found out there were something like 22 different outside doors to that grade school? And so, you know, that's the other end of the spectrum. And so the select committee had the same conversation, Senator, that we're having this morning. And we're hoping that with the help of a good team that can go out there and really analyze these buildings, that we'll have maybe an ABCD kind of an approach that then we can bring back to the legislature and we can really start tackling some of this. So,
okay. Any other questions? Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I kind of did want to go back to the school resource officers issue a little bit more, that at least it's, in my opinion, they're a good deterrent for one thing, and they keep a bad situation from escalating as well. And I think that there's a way that the state can have a grant program so local districts can maybe get a one-for-one match and leverage state dollars to pay for these officers. I know it's a little more difficult in smaller school districts, but, you know, if a bad guy is looking to do something crazy and he sees a patrol car out in front, I mean, that's a great deterrent.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Representative, you're absolutely correct. And I think that these are important conversations that we're going to have going forward. I think the next couple months we're going to have several conversations related to school safety, and we should. It's too bad that has bubbled to the top as one of our big concerns in our country, but it really has. And I'm not sure any of us have the absolute answer. And I tried to allude to a tragedy that we had up in Casper about a year and a half ago. We've learned a lot from that tragedy, but one of the things that we did learn is that you're never going to get rid of the risk that is out there. You can only tackle it and do everything you possibly can. We're going to see. We're going to have conversations about whether we should have armed security officers in every single building in the state, for example, all the way down to just a bigger and better presence. But as Director Panos alluded to, I think that Homeland Security and a lot of folks are working on things like communication and training and just good analysis of how traffic flows on some of these campuses. And so it's good that we're having all these conversations, but point well taken.
And just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, about the locks, I'm sure you've had the discussion that sometimes you could be locking the bad guys in and keeping the good guys from getting in to get the bad guys, too.
Well, that's exactly right, Mr. Chairman. Representative, as I said, we discovered on that campus up in Casper that that several of the doors, we had teachers who could not lock their classes in that classroom when the tragedy was occurring. There was no way except to go out in the hallway to turn around and lock that door and then try to get back inside. And just little things like that. We discovered that many of those buildings, we didn't have the capability to lock them down. If that shooter, for example, wanted to go from this building over to a second building, there wasn't any way that we could lock that second building down on a moment's notice. And we've learned a lot of those sorts of things. But I can't say enough about the local police officers, the security there on campus working together. And the fact is that training that they had already done quite a bit of really paid off that day. So lots of pieces to this safety and security puzzle for sure. And, Mr. Chairman, I really want to apologize to my co-chair, who's been over here all morning and certainly might have a perspective as to Representative Blickery. Sat through all these conversations that we had during the interim and may have a perspective as well. So didn't mean to overlook my co-chair.
Mr. Chair, I think Director Bill Panos and Chairman Landon are just doing a fine job.
Okay. Any other questions in general about school facilities? Any other questions? Okay, do you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Did you want to cover adequacy report, or do you want to move on to the bill?
With the pleasure of the committee. I see some heads nodding yes. Please go ahead.
Let me just touch on it very quickly, Mr. Chairman, if that's all right. The other report that we have in your binder is a report on what's called our adequacy standards. Really, what adequacy standards are is just is our articulation with a lot of effort and a lot of input from school districts about what constitutes adequate educational space. The statutes have both the commission and the department looking at that on a regular basis every 4 years. It hadn't been done, frankly, in as frequently as it should have been, and today it's back on schedule and back on track, part of our stabilization of the commission and department operations. And so we went through a very extensive process with all of the school districts to talk about what constitutes adequate space. These are important conversations because we derive our design guidelines from them, what we end up paying for or not paying for from these adequacy standards. So they're very important to the school districts, very important to us, and do require updating on a regular basis. It also gives us an opportunity to see what has worked and what has not worked in the field. When school districts don't have something that or need something that the state may not have in its design guidelines, we call that an enhancement. And oftentimes school districts will pay for enhancements on their own or go without. And so when we see those kinds of enhancements pattern over a long period of time, we generally consider them for inclusion in the adequacy standards. It helps create equity as we move forward. So we did a little bit of that. There was a couple of surprises from this. First, we had assumed that there would be large-scale changes to the adequacy standards based on the input from the school districts. And after all of the discussions that we had, and Representative Blickery, our co-chair on select committee, was there at most of those meetings, we discovered that, in fact, there wasn't a large-scale change that was needed. In fact, that the standards are working pretty well in general. That they are moving forward the educational programs throughout the system. Are they perfect? No. But in general, this consensus of the school districts who use them had said, generally they're working well. But there were some adjustments that were made. They are minor adjustments in the areas, in a couple of different areas, that relate to how we calculate a square footage, let's say, for a kindergarten class, and some other minor changes, nothing of note. But there was one thing that we looked at and have proposed as we go forward, and we'll be including in our biennial budget request, and that is some equalization of the design guidelines for tracks for 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A. And so there's a little bit of adjustment there. But, again, it is much less than we predicted in terms of the kinds of changes. You know, when you make changes to these adequacy standards, and they generally relate to changes in the design guidelines, there's a bill for that. And we thought it'd be a lot more, and it wasn't as what it wasn't as significant as we had thought going into the project. But it was an amazing partnership, amazing conversation with the school districts. We had representation not just from the academic side and from school boards and from superintendents and from, again, members of the legislature in these conversations. And so it was a good dialogue, and we met over several months and actually surveyed all the districts online, and we went through a pretty extensive effort to engage them. And we're happy with the report, but we wanted to include it because it was due in October, and we wanted to get it done and get it done on time and present it to the legislature and put it in this package along with everything else. So.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm looking at the two reports are stapled together. So it's page 13, I think, are the requested changes to school capacity methodology, and then that piece, and then where are the whole adequacy part on that? As I'm looking for the adequacy, is it in this report?
I'm going to ask, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Or maybe it's towards the back here, I guess. There's several moving parts to this. You know, you talk the capacity assessment. You're going to change some of that, how we count elementary school classrooms and sizes and in gymnasiums. And the piece on this gymnasium part, I want to ask, is it kind of, the capacity piece ties in with the adequacy piece. That's been one of the number one kind of enhancement areas that local districts have done is make bigger gymnasiums over the years. And so if you could direct me, I see the safety and security. Is it towards the end of this, or where is it? I'd like to see those changes, I guess, in the report.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Harshman. You know, I brought up Stan Hobbs, who's our lead person in working with the districts and the consultants at putting the report together. Maybe he can address the representative's question very quickly about what's included and what's not in the report, and then what we can do if we need to make adjustments to the report to give you the additional information that you're looking for.
Welcome. Please identify yourself.
Stanley Hobbs, School Facilities Department. Chairman, Representative Harshman, gymnasiums have been an issue within the capacity study in that all over the state they're sized differently. And when we initially were looking at a capacity study on schools at the secondary level, gymnasiums drive capacity. Sometimes unfairly in the smaller secondary schools, because when you divide it just by a square footage,
right.
You might have the gym carrying over 200 kids capacity in a school that might only have 250 students in it. So what we looked at is in our adequacy standards was looking at those secondary schools with larger gymnasiums kind of on an individual basis and looking at what they are funded for as far as teachers, gym teachers, and also looking at the capacity of the school and calculating those individually. So that's kind of what we were looking at in the gymnasiums.
So the biggest change really to adequacy standards is really how you're going to count gym space and elementary schools, and then this track issue really is how you're. How did the pool conversations come up, or did they come up? And I know I've sat through some of these meetings, and you know, so maybe
we had. If Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Harshman. It was interesting, you know, prior to in last session, certainly. during last session, and then prior to our initiation of the adequacy standard dialogue with the school districts, we had heard from several school districts about that, and with some indication that it was something that they were going to be moving forward on. We had a lot of conversations with them about that early on. And as the conversations went on in the formal process, it fell away. And so that's the best I can describe it. It was interesting. It was interesting. And we thought it was coming, and they, you know, we had good reason for it. We heard a lot about it. But then as the conversation went on, the formal conversation with the school districts, it was interesting. They became, I think, more educated about what the adequacy standards are and are not, and what the impacts are, and when you make decisions, why, and what, you know, what it entails. They started to take off their individual district hats and put on their state perspective, and that really helped for them to understand. If you're going to require pools, really, you're going to put pools in all of the cities, all of the communities around the state, and what does that mean? And in terms of not just capitalization but preservation, how do you preserve that and maintain it over time? And I don't know, some of this discussion was enlightening for them. And it was enlightening for us. I think Representative Blickery can reflect on that. It was enlightening for everyone, but that issue dropped away.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions? Yeah. Representative Connolly.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Director Panos, on the Education Committee, two issues that came up in terms of adequacy for schools were the 16-to-1 ratio for K through 3 and also broadband. Could you address those with this study?
Go ahead.
We talked about, if I may, Mr. Chairman, we talked about a couple of different things about that, of course. So we talked about 16-to-1, we talked about 25-to-1, we talked about ratios, what the national averages are, what our experience has been. That's all part of the dialogue as we go forward in the discussion. And, you know, as the chairman pointed out earlier, we're working towards our capacity goals. The 16-to-1 was a change. Whenever you make a change like that, either direction, it does affect the physical facilities and the dollars that are going out for it. And we can talk a little bit later in the presentation maybe about future funding, but on the capacity issue, particularly with the 16-to-1, we're getting caught up. And we can talk about when that happens, because we can see it now. We can see the year that we're getting caught up. Now, there's still going to be capacity issues throughout the state as populations grow, and in Casper and in Gillette and other communities, we're going to need to add capacity, even in our own community here in Cheyenne. But so that's going to go on. But that backlog, that recovery, you know, from being overcrowded, we're really working. We're seeing a bit of a change where some of that recovery is finishing up now, and we're just getting into more of a asset preservation mode as opposed to capitalization. So that was looked at as part of the study. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I apologize.
Finish your thought. Go ahead.
Okay. And then the other question was about the
broadband.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, one of the conversations I had with the governor prior to coming here to Wyoming was about the issue of broadband and the integration of broadband into this asset. And we're doing it all over the state. We're bringing it in as quickly as we can, as you know, as part of the legislature and administration's initiative to bring it to not only all of our communities but through our schools. And when we started to talk about it, at this level, when you have an asset of this size, you can thread policy initiatives through it, policy initiatives like broadband and other things. And so we've been taking advantage of that as we go forward, and that's inclusive in the studies as well as we go forward.
Just a second, Mr. Chairman. Representative Blickery, do you have a comment?
While we were doing that, another subject that came up was future funding and whether the state was going to be able to continue doing this and how long and all that and what that picture was going to look like and whether the places that we're building that are adequate for 16-to-1 might be still adequate if we are forced at some point to go to 18-to-1 or some other thing, and I'm not saying that you'll do that at any point, but we just talked about it some.
Okay.
Chairman, just a quick comment to pick up on the co-chairman's comments. The good news is most of our facilities out there, if we do have to turn around and go back the other way, we have some good adequacy out there.
And so I just wanted to add that. That was a very good point that Representative Blickery made.
Yeah, the whole debate about 16-1, 18-1, I'm not sure that's totally over. Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think this will be my last comment on this, and whenever you want to start working the bill. But I think this new committee, when when we build a budget for 17-18 next year, we're going to have to solve a huge problem, and that's just COLI's bonus money's running out. And I know you guys had a study, I think, commissioned. I think it'd be important that the whole committee sees that. And I think, even if you say, well, we got some out there, there's not a long-term COLI's bonus thing like we've ridden the last decade coming again, I don't think. And so there's a lot of options that we can look at, obviously, but I think that's something we're going to deal with sooner than later, this time, of course, next year.
Yeah, and just to tag on to that, that's a very excellent point, Mr. Co-Chair. And when I was that was one of the questions I was going to ask at an appropriate time. But the thing that I worry about is we spent $3 billion here in the last 8 or 9 years on K-12 capital construction. So there's been a big rush. And then at the same time when all those buildings are starting to get down and deteriorate and we need to maintain them, and that's when we're not going to have the money. And so that's part of what you're talking about and how we deal with that. And the only way that I've ever learn to deal with those unanticipated things that could be negative is to plan and to be thinking about more than, you know, I mean, we've been so focused on spending all this money we got now. We need to look a little further out, and I'm glad to see that the co-chair is thinking about that because it's been heavy on my mind as well.
Mr. Chairman, just a real quick comment, and then I think the director has some comments as well. I think That was something that during the interim I was really proud of. Our select committee spent quite a bit of time on that. You might remember, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Co-Chair, we really talked about the next 50 years. We didn't talk about just the next 5 or the next 10. We've got a lot of buildings out there, a lot of square footage, and, you know, our interest is in developing a long-term look at the best way we can possibly put together to fund and take care of those schools out there. And you're right, Mr. Chairman, that's a long-term thing. That's very important that we take care of what we've built, let alone the issue of, as the director pointed out, we've got 4 or 5 real hot spots in the state of Wyoming right now that we know today we've got to put elementary schools on the ground. Up in my neck of the woods and up in Gillette, we've got to put a middle school on the ground, and so we know we're going to have to build new schools. We're going to need schools, but we're also going to have to take care of what we've got. So,
yeah, the only other thing I would add, and I want to get into the bill, is we may very well need to go to 18 instead of 16 and have that debate.
Right.
I'm for one, thinking, you know, we really seriously ought to look at that, especially the way that all came through on a third reading amendment. Bill, do you have something else?
I do, Mr. Chairman, about this topic, and then we can move on to the bill, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
Last year, with the select committee and with the commission, I discussed we discussed the long-term implications of both expenditure and revenue in the program, and we didn't have as clear a picture as we would like to have had amongst the members of the legislature and the committee the commission as well. And so we worked with we developed an effort with the University of Wyoming to use a number of different algorithms, actually, in modeling to be able to give us a sense of where we might be. That report is just being completed now, and we, of course, will make it available to this committee, the select committee, and the others. And the same team, by the way, who is working on, for the legislature, the study of the energy economy for the Infrastructure Authority, is the same team that worked on this. But they put it in context of school facilities and school facilities funds. It's a fascinating study. And I can give you a bit of a preview here today, and then we can get you the report as we go forward. Now, the study doesn't do anything to talk about what should be done. It only talks about what the conditions are. We're going to leave that to the legislature about what needs to be done and the techniques that need to be deployed to deal with the issue. But a couple of the things that you've talked about today come up in the report. First, on the expenditure side, When we did model the expenditures based on the current statutes and laws and the rules and regs and the 16-to-1 and all of that, as we integrated all of that into the algorithm, into the math, it appears that we continue to have an expenditure level equivalent to the expenditure level now in through the next biennium, through 18, unless something's different. However, the revenues fall significantly.
To
and
zero. The coal lease bonus. There's $9 million.
The gap in our estimate now, and you, Mr. Chairman, you can read the report. When we get to the report, right now the estimate shows in 17-18 the gap being about $340 million. And in 19-20 the gap actually falls to $160 million, and I want to explain that.
2020.
In 1920, yeah, in 1718, that
year, okay.
The biennial year
is
$340 million. Then in the next biennium, it drops to $160 million, and the next biennium is $175 million. And the reason that gap starts to shrink is because the expenditures fall dramatically, according to the model. The model shows that by 18, as we have talked about, by 16, we should generally be caught up with that backlog that we talked about of capacity. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have capacity issues going forward. We will. But that backlog that the representative was talking about earlier, we've taken care of because of the appropriations made by this legislature. By 18, we have most of the condition issues based on our current standards, the way they currently are, as we've been progressing. The program that you have designed and developed is very successful, and it's changing from a capitalization program to an asset preservation program. That's what we're seeing here. And so when the chairman had talked about a self-correction, it's self-correcting. Now, there's a little bit of a problem here coming up in the pretty big problem coming up in the next biennium, but after that, the program expenses start to fall, and we still have the revenue issue, but it becomes less. And so it actually starts to take up about half of that gap as we go forward, if no other changes are made. Again, this is not a report about what should be. This is a report about what is based on the current conditions. All of the decisions that the Select Committee need to make and the legislature need to make as they go forward, I think with this report, at least for school facilities, is much clearer than we've ever had. And it's because of the good work of the University of Wyoming and, frankly, math algorithms that have been able to get us out a little farther than we've been able to get before. This is earlier than I had predicted. I didn't think I'd have this report until your deliberations in next year for the biennial budget, but we have it early, so we want to get it out early and get it to you as soon as we had it.
Good. We're looking forward to that. And, of course, the whole game is going to change because – you know, before and even now, maybe into the next biennium, you know, the School Facilities Commission has had your own revenue sources earmarked and all that, and you really didn't compete. But it's going to be a new ballgame because the rest of the needs of the state, and boy, if you've been in this committee all week, we've seen a bunch of them. That's where you're going to have to compete against. Okay, let's wrap this up and go into the supplemental budget bill. And who's ever going to walk us through that? Are you going to do that, Bill, either Bill, or are you going to have staff do it? I want to go through it page by page and discuss it.
Mr. Chairman, I think staff will be doing the budget bill.
Mr. Chairman, I think the idea might be to walk quickly through the budget before the
you
bill.
Want to do
is
the
that
budget
your
first
desire?
Okay.
And that way the committee will understand budget hopefully a little bit better and then go right into the bill.
Let's do it that way. Okay. Who's going to walk through the budget?
Okay.
That. Who is?
Can you do that? I can do that, Mr.
Okay,
Chairman.
Bill. By page.
By page. So, supplemental budget request, and let me move to first page that I'll look at is page four. Here is, you know, I talked earlier about the budget being in three parts. One is reporting on what you had identified in the biennial budget bill as being expended in the second year of the biennium. The second part is being additional appropriations that we are asking for in this supplemental budget request the governor is asking for. And then the third is early implementation money. This is the second piece. It identifies those additional costs which we are asking for and what category in the budget that they fall into, and I'll get into some detail about those as we proceed. Generally, though, speaking, the two that are listed as 0411 and 0208, the component and construction projects, those are really particularly the component projects. Those are a series, half a dozen or so, health and safety items that need to be brought forward for your consideration. I'll call them snips and bits, little projects that are important to move forward for because of health and safety, and we can talk about that as we go forward. The 3150, the construction projects, that is specifically for Rollins High School. We found some asbestos there, and it's to mitigate that. The other two numbers that are on this page, the $7,400,000 at the very top of that column, that is for an adjustment to the major maintenance funding. As you know, it's a formula-driven fund.
By statute.
Yes. And we're making a mid-year adjustment to that because of inflation. The last number on this column, which is 6581739, that is what I talked about earlier. That's an adjustment to the unanticipated fund to deal with the market conditions that are going on right now.
Okay, let's go to each one individually by page, please.
The next page, page 5, shows that that asbestos issue in Rollins, the 3150. You see it there on page 5. The next page is page 6.
No, wait a minute. We're not on the same page.
We're not on the same page?
We're looking at the budget. We're on the budget.
I'm looking at the request, the budget request, page by page. I'm looking towards staff. And so we want to make sure everybody's looking at the same document.
This is what we look at.
Let me see. Okay, and this is what I have. Let me make sure. Let me make sure. Yeah?
That's all. Thank you, Senator. We don't have that. We did not bring that to the. See, your page 6 is way different than our page 6.
Okay, time out.
Can I borrow this?
Let's take a 5-minute break, Senate stretch, and get this organized. 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's it. I'll just use this.
All right, we're back on the record. All right, here we go. Director Panos, are we on the same page now?
We are literally on the same page,
okay.
Senator Perkins.
Which page are we literally on?
Page 5.
Okay.
Of the budget requests.
So the page 5 I've got shows a governor's recommendation.
Just the governor's recommendation.
Okay.
And we'll go from there, okay?
Okay.
Sorry about the confusion.
Hey, come on, gentlemen, we're starting. Please, let's take your seats and let's get started. Let's go.
Well, thank you, Senator. The page 5 is really just governor's recommendation, and we've got some administrative dollars some administrative action to move some dollars from one account to another. As you know, in the last biennial budget, there have been some administrative controls in place so that we have, for example, unanticipated funds spent on that year for those particular funds. In prior budgets, we've had some additional, I think, some flexibility that have allowed us to move dollars from to make sure that projects that don't fit into one budget year, that fit into several budget years, have the funding that we can move to from project to project. So that's what this particular request is about, or a recommendation from the governor is about. If I may move to page 6, page 6 really is the $3,150,000 I was referring to earlier for the asbestos issue up in Rollins High School as we went through that project. Page 7 is starts talking about planning projects. In the biennial budget, the legislature had identified not only first-year money, second-year money, but particular projects in the first year and particular projects in the second year that were to be spent in the areas of planning, design, construction. And so in our planning request, we don't exceed the allocation that's there, but some of the projects went forward and some of them did not. And so we have some that stayed on and some that fell off, and then some new ones that came on, and they're articulated here with the asterisks. And I can get into the detail if Senator, if you would like me to, about which projects were in the original budget that stayed on, which projects were in the original budget that came off, and which projects that were not in the original budget that were added but have not, in an accumulated way, have not exceeded the appropriation amount.
I think what we do is, why don't you let us know which ones fell off?
Thank you, Senator. Put on my glasses here so I can read. So the projects that were on the original planning allocation that were not moving forward on in the second year is Washakie number 2, planning project, Natrona number 1, planning project, Niobrara number 1, planning project, and Sheridan number 2. And I have reasons for all of those if the senator would like.
Yeah, why don't you share with us why those are no longer on?
Sure. Washakie 2, the K-12 building is currently in planning to develop the most cost-effective remedy on the K-12. So this particular project, we had some money there, but we were able to use other funds to be able to move that forward. Natrona number 1, we thought they were going to request it. Remember, we're doing this request on 2 years early or something. So they had said on that particular request they did not want to move forward in this particular second year. Niobrara was the same reason. And then Sheridan 1 is a little early. We were a little early. They're still working on a site. Okay. There, and we're not ready for planning money yet. So some of the projects, we try and predict where they're going to be in the second year of the biennium, but oftentimes things change, and we have to move some of them off and then replace them with others.
Okay. Any questions on this area? Representative Connolly.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Director Panos, what's going on in Jeffrey City?
In Jeffrey City?
Yeah.
Director?
Thank you, Senator Perkins. May I ask the representative, in what manner?
I'm just curious with it being on the list. Whenever I drive by it, I always refer to it as a Wyoming ghost town, with the exception of a gas station and a bar, and trees growing out of the old high school.
Thank you, Senator Perkins. Yes, Representative, thank you for asking about Jeff City, Jeffers City. It's an interesting community there, and obviously in change, great change. The school district still owns property there. Not only has a school that they use on a daily basis, they have a teacher that they house there and some students that are from the outside ranches that come into that school. And so they are now working on a planning study to figure out what's the future of that school and what's the future of those students and that teacher that are currently there. So there is part of that building that's occupied. There's other parts of that building that are not occupied because they're unsafe. And so we are looking at planning for the development of a solution for that school district, for that community.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Sorry, let's go ahead and continue.
If I may, Mr. Senator Perkins, I'd also add that the only reason I know all of that is because I visited there, and it was part of those visits that I've been making. And, you know, you have to see Wyoming to really, I think, understand it. And it was a very interesting visit to that community. And so they were really good about showing me the buildings and touring me and giving me a better understanding. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Let me keep going. We're on now page 9. There's nothing there. Continuation. Page 10 starts talking about the design projects. And again, similar to the planning projects, we have some design projects, again, that we had identified in the second year of the biennium in accordance with the biennial budget bill that we had moved forward on. There are some design projects that have dropped off, and there are some design projects that have been added, but there has not been an increase in the appropriation, and we're not asking for one for this particular section.
Okay. Thank you. The
next page articulates some of those changes. Those that have, if I may, Senator, that have fallen off, Washakie 2, we're a little too early for design on that one, and then Campbell 1, the district may be going in a different direction in terms of the solution here, and so we're working on a project in a different area that may be able to resolve the issue for their design. Again, when a school district is as large as Campbell 1 or Laramie 1, they have other solutions possibly to use other facilities, or they combine the project that they had thought they wanted to do with another project or something like that. And so we make the changes as we go forward. And certainly I can get the committee, if I don't have enough detail for the committee on any one of these, I can get the committee a full report on any one of the projects and why, what their condition is and why they either came off or they were added, et cetera.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Page 12, there's not much there. And then we move on to the category that we call construction projects. And, again, the asbestos abatement in Rollins shows up in that particular item, the 33150. The next is the governor's recommendation for the 3150. I must say that Rollins was the Rollins High School, and the Rollins project was one of the most complex solutions that we've had to come up with. As Representative Burkhart knows, he was an instrumental in helping us work through some of the issues and getting them back on track, and they're back on track, and we're very pleased with the outcomes that are moving forward. But one of them was, we discovered that they were a little short on we discovered asbestos, and they were a little short on funding, and we needed to come back and request from the legislature that for health and safety reasons.
All right, thank you.
Okay, we move on to page 16, which is the beginning of the. Here we have the contingency, the unanticipated funds, and then some of the component projects are listed here. Let me address the contingency unanticipated. I had talked about this a little bit earlier. We generally have from the legislature in our biennial allocation 4% for unanticipated. This is not untypical with capital projects in any state. When you're doing something that you're trying to predict 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years down the road where you're going to be, you need to have some fluidity there, some flexibility, and the unanticipated funds and contingency funds help us with that, as well as our statutes and our rules. And so in this particular year, as we engaged a different market than we've seen, in part because the economy has changed, in part because the energy economy, in part because of the level of projects and the amount of dollars that are on the street. From this program and from the other construction projects that are going on, we engaged a different kind of market and then therefore a different kind of use of unanticipated than we could have anticipated 2 years ago. And so this is a slight adjustment to that number, and it takes it from 4% to 6.7%, adds about 2.7%, and it translates into $6,581,000.
My questions on this?
Thank you.
Sure. Go ahead, Mr. Cochair.
How much have you spent out of that in the last year? It's in a report, but what was it at the beginning of this year, and where are we at now?
Senator Perkins, Representative Harshman, you know, I don't have the number right on the top of my head. I'm going to ask Stan to come up and kind of whisper in my ear, and we'll get you the number real quick, because we were just talking about this yesterday. Okay. So, as you know, what we try and do in the biennial budget is we identify, again, projects that are going to happen first year, second year. And in this last biennial budget, one of the things we had was a restriction in the use of those funds to ensure that the unanticipated funds for that year or for that biennium are only used for those projects. In addition, projects change. For instance, we have some projects that are funded in 13-14, and then they are the same project has additional funding or different kind of funding brought in into the 15-16. So, and the rules of the use of the unanticipated are slightly different for each year. So I just wanted to make sure that the committee was reminded of that. I know, Mr. Chairman and Co-Chair Harshman, you deal with that a lot with us on the other committees. And so so it's a little bit of a moving target, but generally this year we and I would have to get the exact numbers to you, but about 18 million or so we started with. We're probably down with the approval of some of the decisions that the commission had just made to yesterday, actually, to move some of the unanticipated into some of those projects that we talked about earlier, some of those that were overbid and the solution set included those. We're probably down to about $4.5 million on the 15-16s, and this will inject another $6.5 million into that number. We look okay. This is a little bit tough to try and predict exactly how much demand is there, but when we look at the demand that's left and we try and calculate about 4%, with this addition, it looks like we're okay. Without this addition, it might get a little tight. But this addition, we look like we're okay, and otherwise we would have asked for more. But we thought this was the number that we could use and we could be okay with through the rest of the 15-16 execution, the execution of those projects, which may happen, by the way, next biennium or the biennium after. And again, we'll reload again in the next biennium, and we'll just keep going as we go. It's this cash flow that is part of what we try and manage, and the commission and the select committee have been very good about asking every single meeting, give us the balance of the unanticipated for every biennium, and then give us how much you've used and then how much is left. And so we're managing a cash flow as this large asset is renovated and repaired as we move forward and then replaced as we move forward. We're right there. We're not asking for more than we need. We're right there. So we hope that that helps answer the co-chair's question, and thank you, Senator Perkins.
Okay. Thank you. All right, continue. Oh, yeah, Senator Hastert, do you have a
thank you, Mr.
Question?
Chairman. Director Panis, you're talking about unanticipated and it's been something that's been on my mind. And if you covered this earlier, my apologies. And if you can, I'll just get up to speed with it. Just as far as unanticipated, and you've talked about to me about cost overruns. When you get the bids and construction costs and coming in a little bit higher than anticipated. And so when we're letting out money and you're getting a kind of an idea of what a construction project costs, but then there's sometimes a significant amount of time that goes before you're able to actually have a contractor bid and get a hard number. you know, and then construction costs have changed. Do you, this is, has always been anticipated, and you is there like a number that says if it's going to be a year out, 6 months out, you know, 18 months out, that there's a calculation to say we're going to provide X number of dollars to, you know, for additional construction costs in anticipation of them rising? Do you, I mean, how do you go about with the anticipating with the, and I know you can't cover everything. I'm sure there's a level of supply demand with our construction companies and things like that, but how do you best get in front of that?
Senator Perkins, Senator Hassert, it's a great question. We actually have it in our original calculations when we bring you an appropriation like the one we're going to bring to you for the next biennial budget. It'll have some predictability in there. We actually try and project out when that project's going to hit the market, and we try and estimate and use some past experience and then some models to be able to estimate what those dollars are going to look like. And then we try and plug into any appropriation, any dollars that are not used, we try and move them forward, you know, inflate them a bit as they move forward in the years to make sure that they're in the neighborhood of the dollars that we expect in that given year. But you can imagine, like with all modeling, and by the way, all capital is done this way. So if you're getting capital estimates from your other construction projects throughout the state, they're all doing a very similar fashion where, because they use the same technique we do, which is to model when those dollars are going to hit the ground. It might be 5 years away, what that $1 would look like 5 years from now. And it may look like $1.05 or $1.10, or it may look like 95 cents, but we try and predict what that's going to be. Are we always accurate? No. That's why we have contingency and unanticipated. It's part of the unknown of doing this kind of budgeting, but also then we execute. When we execute and we bid, then we actually see if we were right. And oftentimes those are off, and that's why we have the unanticipated. So between all of the budgeting that we do, the modeling that we do, and the estimating that we do, and the contingency and the unanticipated, we're able to keep all the projects moving. By the way, it's done like this in every state. It's not dissimilar from other states.
Yeah. And then just a follow-up on that, as far as, you know, we allocated a substantial amount of money in a time frame where we knew construction costs were down. Are we outside of that now, and have you been seeing a steady rise in construction costs, and, you know, and how much, about what, you know, has that been going up?
Senator Perkins, Senator Hassert, it's a really good question, too. I get to ask this a lot. Construction costs are rising. They continue to rise. We actually did an analysis of what it would have been if we would have accepted all of those bids that were over our estimates and not had done the thing that we had done, and I had provided some of that data earlier. But if just on a price per square foot, we would be way over $300 a square foot right now, way over $300 a square, significantly over. I can't tell you exactly where, but because we've done this sort of depressurization, you know, we went back to the projects and asked them to sharpen their pencils and brought it down. We're in the $280, $286 area, but it changes every day we get a bid. Because every day you get a bid, you readjust the numbers, and so it changes significantly. A month ago it was $270, but it's floating around in that high two area. I get very nervous at any bid that comes in over three, and I'm wanting to do something to pressure it back down and to hold it back down. So in our business with our construction, and remember every kind of construction is different. Road, bridge construction will be different than hospital construction, than office building, or than capital building construction. So your square footage costs are going to be slightly different, but ours are rising, and we're holding them down, but we're floating in at about 280, 285, 286, something like that.
Okay, thank you. Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then the last thing is providing you don't stimulate another thought. But,
sorry.
Anyway, no, really, on, you know, I guess, you know, you talk about, and, you know, we've had a lot of conversations about, you know, this building, the cost rising on some unanticipated issues, and wanting to talk about reining that in. You've talked about wanting to rein these bids in, but I guess there's got to be, to me, my opinion, is there has to be a balance between reining that in and then getting a lesser product. Because to a certain point, you get what you pay for. And I don't, I guess, are you, I'm assuming, you know, I guess you're balancing between, you know, trying to make sure the contractors are being are getting you a good bid to getting less or cheaper materials, so you're getting a less quality product.
Director?
Senator Perkins, Senator Hassett, another good question. We have design guidelines. We build the design guidelines. That's what we try and design towards, and that's what we try and bid for. We have a safety net, and it's that. And so the legislature was, and the commission and the select committee was very, very, very smart to have that in place, and we do that. So there isn't that kind of drop-off that you might suspect from this kind of depressurization of the number as we go forward.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, let's kind of move this along. We've got a schedule to keep to.
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Connolly did it.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. Director Panos, does this contingency money ever revert?
Senator Perkins, it does. And this year we actually went through all of our books, and with the help of the LSO staff and a number of the other staff, we actually cleaned through all of our accounts from a long time ago, including the ones now, and we reverted all that money back into the state coffers.
Mr. Chairman, back to you. Okay, go ahead. So let's get...
If I may, on page 16, the other number here is the $4 million number. That's the component projects. Those are a number of if I'm not incorrect, I think it is, and that's a number of different projects that have were health and safety related that needed to move forward, and those are included in that particular category. On page 17, we get into a description of the contingency unanticipated that we had just had some discussion about. I won't repeat all of that. On page 18, there's the number there, the $6.5 million for the adjustment to the unanticipated funding. On page 19, as we keep going through, there's the number again described in the form that they need. On page, I'm really glad to have the same book you do. On page 20, as we move through, we talk about some demolition projects. Again, this is part of what had been identified in the previous biennial budget bill as being spent in the second year of the biennium, and we've, again, dropped some off and put some on just because the projects have changed in terms of their development and planning and that kind of thing. I won't get into the detail, Mr. Senator Perkins, if that's all right, or if the commission would like me to.
Let's keep moving. We need still to get to the bill.
All right, very well. Page 22, again, there's nothing there. And then page 23, we get into land purchases. Again, in the state of Wyoming, we also provide funding for the purchase of land for schools, and again, some fall on, some stay on for the second year as we identified, some come off as we move forward, and again, that's situational based on the district need. 25, there's nothing there. 26, there's ancillary facilities. These are facilities like bus barns mostly, and some other ancillary facilities. Again, there are projects that are identified in the second year of the biennium that can stay on, some that fall off, some that are added based on district need. 28, there's nothing there. 29, we talk a little bit about the detail of that $4 million and some of the component projects and where they're located. Western 7 is a drainage issue because they're getting some mold and some other health issues from their drainage. Park 16 is renovation of a gym for health and safety reasons. Weston 1 is replacement of siding for health and safety. There's some damaged siding there. And again, old roof replacement. This is a leaking roof, frankly. As we go forward, we see that sometimes. It becomes very, very pragmatic with the school districts often. And then the water system, plumbing system, and we had a couple of kids fall down at an improperly surfaced play yard and break some arms and things like that. And so we try and respond to what the districts had asked us for and bring to you health and safety related supplemental budget requests. And so you see that reflected here. Page 30 talks about that a little bit more in the component projects. Page 31, again, reiterates the same number. The major maintenance adjustment is on page 32. This is a basically an inflationary adjustment. It's a formula-driven program where we, based on square footage and age of building, et cetera, we move those dollars out in a formula, statutory-driven formula, to the districts, and then we have to make adjustment to that sometimes, and this is the adjustment for that. Page 32 is again that, and then page 33 is a further description of what that is. Page 34 is the governor's recommendation related to that. Page 35 is again that, and I think I don't know if I got through it, but I think that was
That's it for any questions on that, or ready to go to the bill? Let's go to the bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'll walk the committee through the bill,
okay,
if that's
great.
Okay.
Let's go.
Tanya Heidrich, LSO staff attorney.
Staff.
Where at? I can't see.
He's hiding behind Stetson.
Oh. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
15 LSO 127 incorporates the supplemental budget recommendations that you just spoke to Director Panos about. It comes to you from the Select School Facilities Committee. If it pleases the chairman, I'll walk the committee through the bill page by page. The first page simply outlines the purpose of the bill, and that is, just as I just discussed, it covers the supplementary budget request for the period of 2015 through 2016 for the School Facilities Department. Page 2 simply modifies the definitions that were included in the 2014 session law to include this supplemental budget and the modifications herein. Moving on to page 3, lines 5 through 22, again, this just modifies the definitions to include this budget request. Page 4, lines 1 through 19, follow that same premise. Page 4, lines 21, 22, and then moving on to page 6, lines 1 through 3, we begin identifying the projects and the various designations of money. The first category is on page 5, line 5, for planning. Last year, there was $250,000 allocated for planning. Lines 10 through 22 eliminate the restrictions to report to the legislature. And on page 6, lines 12 through 22, and page 7, lines 1 and 2, you'll see the projects listed that Mr. Panos discussed. We also, if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, I can reference the supplemental budget, the coordinating pages for each of these, if that's preferable.
I don't think so. We can just keep going.
Okay. Moving on to page 7, line 4, we begin the design projects. This money is effective July 1st, 2015. The amount hasn't changed. And again, lines 11 through 22 deletes the districts that were previously identified. And page 8, lines 4 through 12, identifies the new projects or further specifies the new project. Page 8, line 19, you'll notice an asterisk. That asterisk denotes that there is previous funding for this project. Page 8, lines 14 through 20, just simply includes that refinement. Page 8, line 22, is the capital construction funds. That discussion continues on page 9, lines 1 through 22. The additional money for this particular category of funding is the Carbon County High School and the $3.1 million, page 9, line 15. Director Panos discussed that, the asbestos abatement. And this money is effective immediately. Page 10, lines 1 through 22 are the program or the projects that were designated last year within the bill for funding, and then the total was changed on page 10, line 21. Page 11, line 1, is the demolition projects. The amount appropriated was $500,000. This money will become effective July 1st of 2015. The projects previously identified by Director Panos have been further refined, and those projects are listed on page 12, lines 1 through 7. Page 12, line 9. Land acquisitions, again, this money is effective July 1st of 2015, and it's $750,000. The deletion, page 12, lines 17 through 22, is the reporting requirement. And page 13, line 12, or excuse me, line 2 and 3 designate that those funds will be spent for Albany County School District land acquisition. Page 13, lines 7 through 10 is a reporting requirement back to the Joint Education Interim Committee. Page 13, line, Line 12 is the ancillary buildings. This money is effective July 1st of 2015. It's $1 million. Again, the deletions on the bottom of the page, lines 18 through 22, and page 14, lines 1 through 10, delete the districts previously identified and further refined below on lines 13 through 21. Moving on to page 15, line 1 is the component level projects. This money is effective immediately. There's an additional approximately $4 million requested. The additional funds requested can be found on page 15, lines 9 through 22, and page 16, lines 1 through 10. I'll just make a side note that the designation of S or C, you'll see on page 15, lines 21 and 22, page 16, lines 2 through 8. The C stands for the component with a life expectancy of more than 20 years, and the S is a safety, security, or health issue. That's contained in the original bill, so it's not in this. Page 16, lines 13 through 20, is the $9 million that Director Pano spoke of for the safety and security projects. Those funds will be effective immediately. Page 17, lines 1 through 10, these are the unanticipated funds. There's an additional $6.5 million that Director Panos is requesting. Page 17, lines 12 through 22, and page 18, lines 1 through 14, require the School Facilities Commission to conduct a study of the component level needs and other financial resources designated to capital construction, and provide a recommendation to the Select Committee to refine the component level funding by September 1st of 2015, and it designates an additional $250,000 to the Commission or in the Department to secure professional consulting expertise or other administrative costs. Page 18, lines 16 through 19, designate that this bill is effective immediately.
Thank
with
you.
That, are there any questions?
Sure. Senator Meyer.
Yes, some of the questions I have on page 16, the bottom of that.
Mike.
On page 16, the stricken language, 17 through 21, the new language says that it's just merely a reporting condition for the commission. The stricken language is an appropriation authorization only available for expenditure as specifically authorized by the legislature. And I'm wondering, it seems like a fairly significant difference in the flexibility offered or afforded to the commission. And I'm not sure what the specific authorizations were. I know there's some changes as far as over on page 2, in the top of page 3, as that they were subject to the constraints and other requirements imposed by the governor under WS 9-2-10-13. So I guess it's kind of a two-part question to whoever can answer it, whether it's gentleman in front of us or staff. First, what were those constraints and requirements imposed under 9-2-10-13, and what were the constraints in the authorization by the legislature versus merely a reporting requirement?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, with regard to the deletions on page 16, lines 13 through 20, that was at the committee direction and at the request of Director Panos. He did provide, I believe, a list of projects to the committee, but the committee did not feel it was necessary to specifically identify those within this legislation.
Senator Meyer, can I tag team on that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, are you finished, or are you?
I got a couple of
follow-ups.
Okay,
please,
please, just continue with your follow-ups so you're done.
You know, I guess if we could have a general discussion, it sounds like we've, you know, basically taken the gloves off. We took all of the specifics out of the bill, which I don't know whether that gives anybody any heartburn or not, because some of those projects may be, I mean, they were all placed in the pipeline. The bill specifically says they're there, and now they're not there. So necessarily, they don't have to be built because we specifically authorized them in the bill. So, you know, there's it's just a different way of doing business. I understand the need for the director's flexibility, but I just like to have a little discussion what the committee came through when they went down this path, because ultimately your new committee is going to have to decide whether that's the path that they want to take it down, and the legislature will have to do that too. And I'm kind of curious as whether I'm correct in assuming that the authorization, even though it was authorized, then you delete it out of the bill. What does that actually do?
Maybe, can our co-chairs help us with that, either of our co-chairs?
Well, my questions are kind of long.
Well, actually, let me be more specific. We have the both the court chairman of the school facilities commissions who are here and I guess helped work this bill. Maybe they can shed some light on Senator Meyer's question.
Mr. Chairman, so the question that Senator Meyer has is specifically related to the $9 million for security projects. And the $9 million for security projects, there's a list, that list that shows what all of those are. And there's some flexibility in it, because if you can't do it in one place, you can go to another one and do that. Plus, what it's essentially going to do, this $9 million is going to be used very quickly just doing the low-hanging fruit, the things that you can do. One of the first was just rekeying a lot of stuff and changing locks, things that were obviously easy to do and not high-tech. So this isn't about all the different projects. This is essentially about the safety projects across the state, and that's why they've just removed it and said that they'll report back what they are. Now, it might be good to include that list with the bill. Doing that bill, that
Mr. or Senator Landon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Co-Chair Blickery. I think that characterizes the discussion that we had. These are projects that are already in the hopper. We could certainly pull these back into the bill, but we did not think that was entirely necessary. They're going to hit the ground right away. They're already in the pipeline, so I don't know if the director has anything to add to that.
Director Panos.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the list of component projects that are of the subject of the senator's question are as Representative Blickery had pointed out, or Co-Chair Blickery pointed out, is are existing component projects in our current queue that are security related, and we're moving those out as quickly as we can and actually doing them, trying to hit the ground running with those particular projects. It's not a reflection of all of the component projects in the budget bills, the biennial budget bill. It really is just those security projects to move forward, and that was the discussion that had occurred in the select committee and they had seen that list of projects. We talked about the process by which those projects were selected, and then they had moved forward without that included in this particular budget bill.
Right. Thank you. And I think that Senator Meyer's question was a broader-based question. What we have is we have the responsibility not just in the security components, but as we went through most of these lists, we're removing the responsibility to report to the legislature as well as legislative authorization. Continuation. It was more of a global thing with respect to the bill. I think that's to get
yeah,
Senator Meyer's question.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and another example is on page 12 and top of page 13. This is for land acquisition. Yeah, you take away the specific authorization, and it basically, you got $750,000 for the facility needs of Albany County School District 1, but Campbell County is scratched out, Laramie County. I'm wondering if those have already, the land has already been acquired, and are all those ones that have been crossed out?
Let's stop there and let's stop with that. That's a discrete question. Is there an answer to that question?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chairman. Senator Meyer, it's a great question, actually. Again, like all of the others, we had predicted of several in 13 that we would need some dollars for some specific projects, and we were articulate about that as the legislature had desired about that. And now, as we have gotten closer to those dates or that time, the second year of the biennium, the needs of the districts have changed. And in some cases, they have put those projects off. In some cases, they've come up with a different solution. In some cases, they found other ways of either doing this, or their request has been put aside or delayed in a little bit, and so that's why you see the mix of specific projects kind of falling off, and then other projects coming forward. They are ready. The ones that are there are ready, and the ones that aren't, we thought they might be ready, but they're not today.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the problem I think I'm going to have if I'm in one of these school districts is I'm going to get a call from somebody that sees this and says, well, how come my school's not on the list anymore? And, you know, maybe just some type of understanding that you could give us about why they came off. I'm sure there's a good reason for it, but, you know, we're going to have to answer that question if we're one of the people representing these people in this district.
So if we can have a follow-up on which one.
Senator, we can sure get that for you. You know, some of this stuff was to streamline the bill, obviously, but we can come back to you with some of this detail that's provided to the Select Committee that isn't necessarily, you know, included all the way up the ladder. So.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and I think that it looks like, in general, you're putting back the flexibility that previous directors have had. We kind of took it away from them in this last biennium, the more specific or something. So I don't know exactly what that authorization thing is there and what the differences are with the governor getting into the process.
Okay. Wait a second. We're going to go here. We're going to go to Co-Chairman Harshman, and then
Senator.
Tanya has some explanation, too.
Just on the land acquisition, at least the project's listed, so we know what we're paying for. And I think on the safety deal, I think you want to get us the projects, because I think as we work this bill and we get it in there, I want to know what we're appropriating for, what those projects are. And I know the rest of the legislature is going to want to see that. We've changed the way we're doing. So I don't want to get into this part block grant kind of, and we're the commission. We got to know what we're appropriating for. So we appreciate that list, and we'll put it into the bill. Whether we're not going to do it today, obviously, I don't know, Mr. Co-Chair. It's going to be your decision how we work it or if we lay it back a little bit or whatever. But thank you.
Tanya, did you have further comment?
Mr. Chairman, I can clarify regarding Senator Meyer's question and the deletion of the legislative authorization. This is your opportunity to approve these projects for the second year. And so this mirrors what was in the bill last year for the first year of the biennium. And so in many instances, you appropriated $500,000 or $750,000. And so this is your opportunity to strike the legislative authorization and insert the listed projects.
Right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, if you look at this and then you look at how a school district feels about that, I mean, we have the superintendent for Campbell County here, and he could tell you what this is about as it relates and what his worries would be as it relates to Campbell County being scratched out in this specific thing.
I appreciate that, and I think what we're looking for is two things. There's two issues here. One is when things have fallen off the list, we're just trying to have a little bit. We want a little bit of supplemental information. So when we're asked on the floor why that project's off the list, we have that explanation. Yes. The other issue is that on some of these, like the security issues, there's $9 million of security. We're just saying that. And Co-Chairman Harshman's specific question is, we'd like to know what those projects are for. We'll have the discussion about whether the flexibility moved between those, but ultimately he would like to know what we're, and I think that's a decent request that he'd like to know what those specific allocations are for so we know what the appropriation is.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what we're not going to do is we're not going to get into a block grant. I mean, we want to know specifically, and Bill, you know that, we're going to get into situations where when we appropriate, we know what it's for and if it's been spent, if it's not been spent, if things are removed. I've been down that road. And if, you know, so if we're going to things come off the list, we want to know why and those kind of things. So I think we can figure this all out and get this done right.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just add one more thing to it. I included in the package that went to the Select Committee and to the Governor's office was a specific, project by project reason why things were kept, things had fallen off, and things were added. For instance, I had not gone into that detail. I'd gone into the detail on a couple of the projects or a couple of the changes, but not on land. I moved through that. For Campbell 1, the district has land funding in the 2013 budget for that particular site. That's why it didn't need funding here. Laramie 1, the district had land funding in the 2015 budget for a site. They didn't need land. They didn't need this money to do it. They did it a year ago or this last first year, et cetera, et cetera. It goes down through. So we have the reasons that each of the school districts and each of their boards had talked about and had moved through and made decisions about in a public way so that the public is and those school districts are very clear about why they've directed these moves, why they've moved those things on or off based on their timing. So we have all that specific information and can make that available to the legislature.
Okay, thank you. Senator Meyer.
Maybe we can look at a little change in the drafting. And, Tanya, I don't know whether you can do this or not, but if we had a list there in the first year and authorization, and then we had another column that said, you know, completed, and we'd scratch them off there and we'd move over to the completed column. So then we could know in the bill that they're scratched off the authorization list and, you know, basically that money's been spent or whatever. And I don't know whether if there's some easy way to do it without, you know, in the drafting. And I'll let you guys think about that a little bit and scratch your heads. That would maybe help us some.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we're going to work the bill today, and we're going to hopefully pass this bill out. And if you want to come back with some kind of amendments when you go next year, that's fine. But
right. We're
not going to stop and not get this bill out of here today. So if you want to do that and come back with a different way of doing it to amend it, fine. But we're going to work the bill. And I think we all understand. When I read it, I was with Bill, with both of you and what you were doing. So I don't think we got issues. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so are we done with the question? Are we ready to work?
Mr. Chairman, just one.
We'll go to, okay.
Mr. Chairman, just to add to the comments of the chairman, I think it would be pretty easy. We've got those projects. I think, Mr. Co-Chairman, we can pull those in, get them into the bill right away in the session. We know exactly what they are, and I think we can pull them in pretty easily. So thank you.
Okay. Senator, Representative Stepson.
Mr. Chairman and Director, just on that section 2, the study and the appropriations for the study, just can you explain that a little bit more? I mean, is this sort of what you did with adequacy standards, or is this a regular study that you do? Why? Could you just explain a little bit about that?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And both the Select Committee, School Facilities Commission, and the Select Committee had talked extensively about the program and really the fundamental shift of the program over these next few biennia from capitalization to asset preservation. And in that conversation, they talked a lot about the tools that are currently available for us, fiscal tools that are currently available to us in all of the public schools in Wyoming to execute those responsibilities, major maintenance funding, component funding, capital funding. They included in that dialogue two other funding sources that are actually not part of this discussion, which are in the block grant, the O&M funding for facilities and the utility funding for facilities as well. So they kind of arced through all five funding sources, O&M, utility, major maintenance, component, and capital, and said, are all of these connected? Are we thinking about them all in one way? And we said, you know, we haven't studied that yet. We don't know. We would for the select committee and for the commission, we would be happy to do that. And that's really what the essence of these dollars are for, is for us to prepare for the next biennial budget a roadmap, if you will, a blueprint of where we go from here in that shifting from capitalization to asset preservation. And I hope I articulated that correctly, and I'll let the chairman and maybe even the co-chairman talk to it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thanks to the director. I think he did characterize that discussion pretty well. The whole idea is that there are a lot of inconsistencies out there district to district in terms of how component, major maintenance, those kind of funding sources are being used. And the question from a lot of our members of the select committee was simply, going forward, are we doing everything that we can do and knowing everything that we can know about asset preservation? Because as I mentioned in my initial remarks to the committee this morning, we're going to shift in that direction. We've got a lot of buildings out there, and the idea is we want to take care of them. So I think what this study will allow us to do, it'll coincide with recalibration efforts this coming year for our schools. We just want good, consistent, interrelated ability to set policy with how we take care of those buildings out there. So I think that's what this is all about. This is a select committee request, and that's what's reflected, Representative. I hope that helps.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I guess just to follow up, so those other two components, the O&M utilities, does that get rolled into this too, or do you plan on there being at least some feedback between you guys and recalibration so that there's some, you know, gelling of all five of those components?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, yes. We will, in fact, have that kind of collaboration and discussion, a connected discussion amongst the five, and calibration will be the opportunity to do that on the block grant side.
Okay, fine. Other questions? Are we ready to work this bill, Dan? The motion second, we're on the bill. All right.
Probably any public comment at first.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good point. Is there any public comment with respect to this bill? Yes, sir. Please step forward. Do we have the karaoke mic? Or are we going to swap, do musical chairs? There we go. Not yet. Hold it closer. And
let's try this one. How's that?
Sure. If you want to cozy in there next to the director, that's just fine.
Cozy in next to Bill. My name's George Gawida, School Facilities Department Design and Construction Administrator. One of the things I noticed on page 12, line 6, is the Goshen project. That school project bid about a week ago, a week and a half ago, and it came in a little bit over budget, but we were able to juggle the budget a little bit and work with the contractor to juggle his schedule in anticipation of this appropriation being made. Now, he had to jump through some gymnastics to do that really unfairly we did not advise him that he would do at the time of bidding, but he was nice enough to work with us. What I would like to request is that, if possible, that $386,929 be made available immediately rather than having to wait to July, because that district is ready to start construction on this school. So it's a fairly minor change, I believe, but it would really help out that district.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
Co-Chair.
Yeah, you know, maybe this is an isolated example, but I sure hope you're not going out and soliciting bids until the money's appropriated, because until the legislature decides, you may not have that money. Now, Goshen County, we really got to take care of Goshen County, and it's an unusual spot, and my colleague sitting right next to me, but that's trying to be funny. It's not funny. We really need to not be bidding projects unless they're authorized and appropriated.
Senator, that is the case, and that's the gymnastics I was talking about that the contractor agreed to, that he would work around that building to build the school. This is for the demolition, and it would be much easier if we could do that in a sequence that was probably more appropriate to a logical construction sequence than making them jump through the gymnastics.
So, Mr. Chairman, then you didn't bid this work. You're saying that you just want to facilitate a better construction schedule for the other school and want this effectively meet. Okay, well, that's different. Then I misunderstood. I'm sorry. We don't want to be bidding jobs that you haven't got the legislature appropriating money for.
Senator Burns.
I'm a newbie to this thing and, frankly, this process. These projects here are what's involved in this bill in the $9 million?
Mr. Chairman?
Director Pan?
Yes.
Okay. Then, and you're familiar with all these projects?
Yes.
I'm curious. You've got $300,000 for the Sheridan High School main building, and this is for the entryway access control. They just finished a project not 6 months ago that has access control to that building. So I'm trying to figure out what else they're going to be doing there.
I could get back to you with the details of that particular project. I think that thank you for that. With every one of the projects on this list and all of the projects that will go forward, we're going to compare our most recently developed design guidelines that have been augmented for enhanced security against what we are building and have built. We may, in some cases, pick up some facilities that have either recently been designed or constructed that may, because of funding or other things, have left out certain pieces that we would find in the design guidelines that we may put forward. I'm not going to say that's the case here. I don't know that for sure. But you'll find as you work through these programs that, again, no one project is the same, and we can't predict exactly where we would be in security design guidelines precisely. And they may have left something off. They may have left a piece off that now is going forward. That's one side. The second side is this list was, and I'm going back to a conversation we had with the Select Committee, this list was in the existing component. We have a very large demand for component projects. And we maintain, along with the School Facilities Commission and the Select Committee and the school districts, a very large list of projects. We went back into that body of projects and extracted that had been approved for funding and extracted those that were needed to be completed that fit these design guidelines, that were security-related, and then we assembled them on this list. That way we assured that they didn't have to be re-vetted again, that they by the districts, that they could actually come up, that they were part of that existing approved list of component projects. We extracted $9 million, because that's basically what we had, of security-related projects and put them out. I can get you, though, more detail about that specific project, unless the staff have it off the top of their head. About that one. No, we don't.
Or the Sheridan District 2 doing some sort of funds transfer or something.
No, it's nothing like that. These are hard projects that are related to the design guidelines and implementation of the design guidelines. It wouldn't be a fund transfer.
Okay.
Hang on, folks. We're in public comment. We just finished one public comment. Is there any other public comment before we move deeper into the bill? Hearing none, okay, we're back on the bill. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Burns?
Never mind. I'll ask later.
Okay. Senator Meyer?
I was just curious why we're spending $764,957 for a K-6 entry access control when it looks like some of the other ones are substantially cheaper. Of course, you got one at $650,000, but is that a lot of construction besides just the electronic buzzing door?
Oh, it may be. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, it may be. Many of these solutions involve some structural changes. Some of them involve, as we get into the security guidelines, and I would welcome the senator and all of the committee members to read through some of those guidelines. It's very interesting, and our schools are in different places. So a school may have the remote locks but not have a single point of entry. They may have 27 points of entry, as the chairman had pointed out earlier. And so we're restructuring so that you have a single point of entry. You have to go by someone that will register you in, and that you can't just get into the school. You have to go through the administrative area. And it may require some structural changes. It may require some changes above the ceiling, HVAC, lighting, and some other things to make sure that we have a secure facility to the front and all around the facility. We may also get into, and some of these projects, and again, again, because of where the projects are and the schools are, may involve perimeter security, fencing, and things like that. And so you're going to see a variation in the number here, but it's very project specific. And of course, the design and the planning has been well vetted, not only by the school district, but by all the engineers and our staff, for them to even appear on this list. And as we go forward, again, we compare a design guideline to what we see on the field. We have these security experts give us their assessment of where those gaps are and what's needed. We'll put a number to it, and we'll move forward like we do any other larger construction project.
Thank you, Director. Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, and just to kind of, we're not going to solve this today because I think a lot of us have a lot of questions. I think the thing you're sensing on this committee is this is a new area for us. And we've never appropriated money. We set some aside last year on specific authorization. And so then when you look at this, you think, I don't really know a lot about this. And so I'm supposed to vote and say $149,000 for Big Piney Elementary School, K through 5, entry access control. And I don't really know what that means. And I think we're going to need more education on the committee. And then the other thing that's kind of giving us pause, I would say, I don't want to speak for everybody on the committee, but so $9 million, I don't know how many schools there, how much more is out there, and how much of this has been really vetted. And so that's the things I'm just having a little bit of reservation about. And we're not going to solve it today. So we're going to solve it probably in the Senate when the bill, I think, is going there first, going to be the first crack at it. Now, so I'm not going to burn any more committee time on this, but I just want you guys to know we're going to need a lot more information, I think, as a committee before we go down a new road of funding.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Let's go to Representative Connolly then.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Director Panos, just to add to your list of things to do, we just upped your unanticipated cost from 4 to 6.5% earlier in the bill. But looking at this list, it's about 11% for unanticipated costs, almost double what we've done in the rest of the bill. So could you go a little bit further into this unanticipated funds not allocated to one?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I need to, if I may, clear up a couple of things. One, this is not unanticipated costs. We have buckets of money, different money that the legislature has authorized. And in our dollars that we have authorized, we have major maintenance funding, we have minor capital funding, and we have major capital funding. This is in that middle category called minor capital funding. There is identified monies for the first year in the biennial budget and the second year of the biennial budget for expenditures of those monies. And when we look at the entire budget bill, the entire biennial budget bill, they look at that appropriation and they say, generally what the practice has been is they say, what is 4% of that entire appropriation? And they apply the 4% in an account called unanticipated. That's for use on all projects everywhere because we can't predict 3 years before where these projects are going to be. This is not unanticipated funds. These are direct appropriation for component. And we are doing it in a different manner because of the nature of security. We have said we want to bring these to the front, pull them out of this. We have obviously a higher demand than we have supply of money. So we want to pull those in that demand list that have been pre-vetted. We want to pull those security-related projects out and get them started right away because we know we're going to eventually have to get to them. And this now leads to, if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Harshman's question. The way we'll know what the big ticket looks like is after we've completed the assessment that we are currently undergoing. That assessment will be done by spring, and we will have a clear picture looking back at all the 25 million square feet. And by the way, excluding these projects, because they'll be done, what are the number of projects that we still need to do to be in compliance with that security guideline? That's when you'll have clarity about that large, if I may, bill, that large ticket. And so you'll have clarity then. This is just a quick start so that we don't wait for these security upgrades. We can actually do it in parallel, do the assessment, have the guidelines in mind, and bring some projects forward. And that's what was discussed with the Select Committee, and that was discussed with the governor, and that's why it's part of the governor's request, is to kickstart, if you will, some of those projects, because the number is going to be a lot larger than this when that number comes through. for all the security upgrades that have to be done at a 25 million square foot asset, it's going to be significant.
Okay.
Hang on one sec. Mr. Co-Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and a lot of us were concerned when we did this bill last year about this $9 million, and Co-Chair and I were talking about this. That's a big number, so we need to know what it is, and there's not going to be probably any more just block grants, if you will, to do security. We're going to have to zero in on this. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, let's work this bill.
Yeah, let's work this bill. I mean, just so you know, this what we're talking about, if this is the down payment, then the real, you know, if you just took this number and took the average and multiplied it through the schools, you're looking at $100 million as a step forward. And so that as we start down this road, and that's going back to the Mr. Co-Chairman's point, you're going to need to educate this committee. We don't have the benefit of what happened in the select committee. We're going to need to educate this committee because what we do in this starts to set the precedent for what we do in the future, and we're going to want to tread lightly. So let's work the bill. So let's start on page one. If there's any changes, pages one or two. Page three. No changes on page four. There are no changes. Page five. Page six. Page seven. Page eight. Page 9, anything on page 10, page 11, page 12, Senator Nick Meyer.
Line 6, that 386,929. I'm not sure whether it's going to have to stay on line six, but I guess I want to make that effective, that appropriation amount effective immediately for those purposes.
Second. There a motion, a second discussion, a question. I mean, ultimately, if we go to section three on page 18, it makes the bill effective immediately. So my question would be, isn't everything we do in this bill effective immediately?
Mr. Chairman, the bill is effective immediately, but there are certain pots of money that are effective July 1st. It's in the very first designation of the provision on. I apologize.
So Tanya, in order to
page 11, lines 3 and 4.
With the motion we have, would it be there, or would we do that in section two?
Mr. Chairman, I just leave it.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it would take a separate section just for this particular project to make it effective immediately.
Okay. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I just have a question. Is there a need from the School Facilities Commission standpoint that it needs to be effective immediately just because the good senator from Goshen County wants it. I mean, is there a need? And if there is, why didn't you ask for it?
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Senator Meyer?
Yeah, we just heard testimony to that effect from the School Facilities Commission. They can reiterate it if you choose.
Okay.
Thank you.
Director Panos?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Nicholas, Representative Nicholas, I appreciate that. As you know, our projects are moving constantly, and we're going very, very quickly to get these schools built as quickly as we can. Oftentimes, but between the time that we put the request together, move it through the governor's office, and gets through select committee, and then comes before this commission, the conditions have changed. This is one where the conditions have changed just slightly. We don't need any more money. We just need it to be made available slightly earlier to meet the scheduling needs of the particular school district. Happens sometimes. Pretty rare, but it does happen sometimes, and so we thought we'd take this opportunity to be able to bring that forward, and that was the reasoning behind it.
Representative Subson?
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on the proposed amendment that's on the floor,
Is there any problem with making that the only other appropriation in that is that $131,000? Is there any problem with just making that all effective immediately?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Representative Stubson, no, there's no problem in making all of that effective immediately for us, at least.
Okay, are you offering an amendment to Senator Meyer's amendment?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think all we need to do probably, and I'll take some guidance from Tanya, but on lines 3 and 4, page 11, just change that to effective immediately instead of for the period commencing.
Have that motion a second on the amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I have no problem with the two good representatives from the Toronto County doing that just because they feel like it's good for their district.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. We're on the amendment. The question on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment as amended?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. We're back on the bill. On page 12, further amendments on page 12, page 13. Page 14. Page 15. Page 16.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I've got on this issue of security, and before I make a motion, I want to ask a question of the director. Has this been committed to this list, or is this a list for us to review and you're reviewing? Has any of this been committed to?
Director?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, can you define committed to? I mean, we've committed.
Have you bid it?
No. We've committed to it in the request to the governor. The governor's request is in front of you. We've committed to it to the commission through their process of getting it, but not in the field, no.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, my motion would be to delete the $9 million, but I'm going to hold off on that till we know a little bit more about this, because this is an area that I have concerns about. Just we're giving blanket dollar amounts, and we got a report that we haven't fully digested. We don't know what the cost is ultimately going to be. We're running out of money for other things as well. So I think we got to rein this thing in, but I'm not going to make that motion now, Mr. Chairman, because this is going to be a Senate file, and when we get to the Senate, we'll be talking more about this in the Senate Appropriations Committee and maybe have a little more information. And if, quite frankly, if I'm not satisfied, then I will probably try to take it out, but I'm just one of 90. But we really need to get a handle on this and what it's going to cost. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Meyer, and then over to Representative Stubson.
And the concerns I have on this is just kind of balancing out your major maintenance, because this was originally part of basically a classification that would be approved by major maintenance. And because the districts are doing it now, and I'm assuming that's where they're getting their money to do it, their access. It may not be to the specific specifications which you have anticipated in these numbers, but the districts are putting in these access. I know the little town of LaGrange in their school has a single point of entry, and the whole district, I think, did that 2 years ago.
But, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Director.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, actually, this isn't through major maintenance. This is minor capital or component funding. It's a separate type of funding. It is not a formula-driven allocation to the district. This is component funding, which means each and every individual project is identified and then brought forward through the budget bill for funding. And then you approve all of the projects as they come forward. We have a list that doesn't need that a list of demand side from the school districts that is much larger than any appropriation that we can put together in any given year. So we feed it in based on priority. And we feed it in based on priority through a vetted process that the districts help us with. And so a team of people from not only our staff but the districts sit and look at all of this demand that comes forward. And then they decide these top five will help are the ones that we're going to go ahead and move forward with the biennial budget request. Then we make that request and move forward. That's a very different process than the major maintenance process, which is a formula-driven, goes out to the districts based on square footage and age of building that goes out that they spend on major maintenance. So this is not that.
Okay,
this is
you,
a
project-specific
appropriation.
That was in the formula-driven one. I stand corrected on that, and I'll get with you to find out the details for my own self here, and I won't burn any more committee time, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Stevenson doesn't have a comment. So any other? Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just make a motion that on that Romanet 9, and Tanya, you can work it in there, but that this list be included in the bill and that that unanticipated $1,042,236 not be expended until specifically authorized by the legislature.
We have a motion. Do we have a second? This motion is second. Further discussion? Representative Stubson.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It could the good co-chair restate that second part about?
Just that this list would be in the bill, funded similar to the other areas of the bill, but the $1 million above there that are not allocated to one, that we'll keep it in there, but it won't be expended until specifically authorized by the legislature. So we want to see another list before we spend.
Okay,
Don, I think, has a question.
We're on the amendment. Don?
Just to clarify, with that $1.4 million carryover, we'll have to put some language in there that says it
would not revert.
Yes.
That's right. Thank you.
Okay, so we have that clarification. Further discussion? We're on the amendment. Are ready for the question? All those in favor of the amendment say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion carries. Back on the bill. Yep, let's through it. Unless there's something on 17 or 18. Are ready for the question on the bill? Ready for the question? All those in favor? Oh, that's right. Thank you. Roll call.
Senator Dockstetter.
Aye.
Senator Hastert.
Aye.
Senator Meyer.
Aye.
Senator Bebout. Representative Blickery. Representative Burkhart. Representative Escobel.
Aye.
Representative Moniz.
Aye.
Representative Nicholas.
Aye.
Representative Stubson.
Aye.
Co-Chairman Harshman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Perkins.
Aye.
Senate file or House?
Senate file. And we'll send you a good bill, it's like we usually do.
Okay,
what we're going to do, we're going to take a 5-minute Senate break, and we're going to get into the energy initiative. Jeremiah is here, Nathan, so we'll do that. 5 minutes. We're leaving today. Okay, welcome back. Jeremiah, welcome to the Joint Appropriations Committee. The floor is yours.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jeremiah Riemann. I serve as the Governor's Natural Resource Policy Director. It's a pleasure to be here. I know you have a packed schedule and would like to get home, so I will keep my presentation very brief. I have provided you with a copy of a presentation. I don't intend to go through all of the slides. I think you all have the background related to the creation of Section 334, the value added in industrial plan. But if you need me to go through that, I certainly can. I'm going to start on slide 10 at the bottom of page 5 in the handout that you have. Section 334 contemplates that the governor's office would engage with the Appropriations Committee as well as the Minerals Committee. Earlier this year, I had the pleasure of meeting with the Minerals Committee, and this is my follow-up with you. What you find on page 5, slide 10, is a diagram of the process that we're using to move through as we determine the best approach to this value added and industrial plan. I'm not going to go through all of the steps of that beyond what you'll find in the slides that follow that. The first step of that proposal is to host industrial roundtables. These were roundtables with executives from companies within Wyoming as well as national and international influence that have the potential to give us guidance and vet whether this is an appropriate process or an appropriate thing for the state of Wyoming to engage in. What we found through those roundtable dinners that the governor hosted, and a few of you attended those meetings, Senator Nicholas was at 3 of the 4, Senator Bebout made it to 1, and Senator Rothless actually made all 4 of those dinners that were hosted. What we found through the course of those meetings is strong support for the concept and are moving through this process to vet it. What we also found are a number of questions that we need to answer. What is it that is the asset that you want to build around? Is it an existing resource, a facility or operation, a natural resource, a waste stream, an input to a facility? That was something we had not given much thought to when we met with many of the companies. They suggested that they send a lot of their their equipment to Houston for work, where they have to purchase it out of Houston, and it would certainly be a great value to them if they had it in the state of Wyoming. So we need to look at that. We also heard that perhaps we need to consider that it's a facility that doesn't exist today that might be something to build around, something like a cogeneration power plant. We've certainly heard some interest in a few companies that are looking at that on their own. We also heard about our need to look beyond just the Industrial Heartland Center as a concept and look at others, whether they be in India, China, the United States, or elsewhere, to determine what we should do, as well as think about not just one large industrial facility, but perhaps smaller facilities, because we have many base assets that can't move. You can't move the Trona patch from where it's at, should you build something around that. We've got great manufacturing happening in Campbell County. We can't move some of those businesses. Should we consider smaller industrial facilities around them and their inputs and outputs? We also heard a great deal about technology as being a method for us to get over some of our workforce constraints in terms of just the quantity of workforce. We also heard about our need for additional educational opportunities and what resources might be put there, as well as infrastructure needs, rail in certain parts of our state. Air travel was a major theme that we heard through those roundtables. Coming out of those roundtables, we are looking to establish at least one task force, maybe more, that would look at this further and give us guidance, as well as be afforded to give you guidance as we evaluate this. It would be modeled after something similar to the Governor's Energy Engineering STEM Integration Task Force, and that would be populated, again, by industry leaders, representation from the legislature, other Wyoming leaders, and, as appropriate, perhaps state directors, state agency directors. We're in the process of moving into phase two of the plan, and that is our information gathering process. I'll be meeting with my team next week to discuss this further and where we should go with it. And you'll find a few bits of information about this on slide 13. One of the things that we know we need to do in order to provide good information to businesses as well as to the decision makers relative to our approach is to do outreach to local governments and state agencies to understand what is in place relative to education, our infrastructure, whether it be schools or roads and rail, transmission lines, and other county regulations, state regulations that could certainly have an impact, land use patterns, regulatory schemes in a specific area. And we will be putting that together very quickly and getting that out to those groups. And I have already started a roadshow, if you will, to do that. We'll also be working with the Business Council on a business survey so that we can broaden our outreach beyond just those companies that we've had the opportunity to meet with so far. As is noted on there, our timeline is to complete that by the end of the year. We will dip into early 2015 doing this work, but we are aggressively moving forward. After we complete that information gathering phase, we will go into two phases, the analyze phase and the develop phase. You could consider these, the analyze phase, as the feasibility study to determine what projects we should consider and the likelihood of success for those, and put that on a percentage basis so that we can understand, can we increase that if we do anything, whether it's through the legislature, through putting forward incentives for activities in the state. And we'll do that work through work groups, and we will be engaging with the companies that we've met with so far to utilize the technical individuals within their companies to help us with that. The develop phase, I could consider that the case study where we start to really fine-tune our approach and focus in on where we want to go. And then we will get to the implementation phase, and that's where, of course, the legislature and the governor both come back in heavily in determining what investments we want to put forward. We intend to try and put that forward by the middle of the summer for work through the middle of summer into the fall and winter of this coming year. I do want to note one thing. As I have at the bottom of that slide 16, that we may move to implementation more quickly if we find something that is really that crown jewel that we need to act on. And we've certainly found some of those. One of those examples could be a gas-to-liquids proposal that is currently making its way through the Joint Minerals Committee. We don't want to stop progress if we can avoid that, just simply to go through this approach. And then finally, we want to set this up so that it's repeatable, so that if we do focus in on one specific market or market segment, that we could ultimately go back and look at other markets and market segments over time, and that this not be a one-time investment on our part. And certainly you could look at a lot of different areas for focus, whether they be in chemical and refining, as I have here. You could do it for tourism under this approach. So we're certainly interested in ensuring that this is repeatable. We have been excited by a number of the conversations that have already taken place. We already have a number of projects that are being considered by companies. And that's revealing some interesting synergies that we might be able to take advantage of simply out of the conversation, and perhaps nothing that we need to do other than get out of the way. So I will stop there, Mr. Chairman. I know you've got a tight schedule, but happy to answer any questions related to this approach.
Jeremiah, thank you. And we'll take whatever time it takes. This is very important to the state committee. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeremiah, you talked about work groups and taking it on the road. A little more clarification there. Are you actually going to take what you're working on out around the different regions of the state and get the feedback there, or how are you going to do that?
Go ahead, Jeremiah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Doctor, that's exactly what we're doing. I've already made a trip out to Sweetwater County to meet with a number of groups there so that we can begin to gather the information. Because ultimately, any recommendation that the task force, the governor's office, might bring to you certainly needs to be vetted at the local level and have a strong support system so that we can say this is where it should be. Because, you know, if it's one industrial park, how does that benefit all the rest of the state if we choose to, say, to go to Sweetwater County because of the Lincoln, that whole kind of triangle there? We need to make the case that that makes the most sense for the state's investment of resources across the board.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeremiah, just two questions. The first, was when we started this, it's been a few years ago, and Mr. Co-Chair was chair of Minerals and brought through a bill on this nuclear energy production study. And part of that deal, we had this dream of maybe setting aside and pre-permitting, and setting aside lands that kind of designate a zone, of some type. So basically pre-permitting. Any kind of work in some of this on that, or is that even a thing that industry wants?
Mr. Chairman, I think it is something that industry wants. We are hearing about it all the time. We're actually engaged in a process right now as it relates to pipelines. But certainly if we're going to pick a large geographic area in order to establish one industrial facility, we're going to have to consider pre-permitting. Are there opportunities, say, under the Clean Air Act for us to carve out a part of the state and say this is an industrial area of our state we will be less constrained by carbon issues than other places in the state. That is, as I understand, an allowable approach under the Clean Air Act.
So, that's what we'd learned in Canada a little bit. Obviously, different rules, but it was as a group. I mean, it was an entire facility, kind of where they could work together to control emissions. So that's part of that. Appreciate that. Just a kind of a specific question about the ammonia plant and Sweetwater. What is there? Anything happening there? Or I keep hearing, read in the paper, frankly. That's where I read it.
Yeah, there's been some permits and things going on there, and that's with J.R. Simplot, I believe.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Jeremiah.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when I was in Sweetwater County, Simplot was involved in the conversation that I was at. They've got the permits that they need. They're under construction right now,
and we'll
be building that facility. Yeah.
And to me, I mean, I'm a neophyte at this. Just I like to get excited talking about, but that to me seems like a huge foundational kind of industry that's going to build on others, and use some of our natural resources, of course, but it's exciting. But okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Co-Chair, one of the things that, and I was going to ask a similar question, that you remember the bill that you sponsored on the nuclear task force, and the thing that we haven't been talking about a lot lately has been nuclear, and so I want to ask Jeremiah. There's a lot of things that came out of that task force that have possibilities for Wyoming, different things we could do in that industry. Have you, and you really haven't talked much about it. Are you having any discussions about the nuclear and what it could do and what we might do in Wyoming and some opportunities that might exist or things we might be able to promote and see fruition on?
Mr. Chairman, I can't say that we've gotten deep into that conversation. What I can share is that in one of our conversations, there's been identification of a cogen facility, and we've talked a little bit, or at least I have, with the Idaho National Labs folks about the opportunities that exist with some of the smaller modular nuclear systems to attach that to that system. And I think there's a lot of interest across the board in that conversation, but it's certainly a broader conversation needs to be had.
Yeah. Representative Greer. Yeah,
Mr. Chairman and Jeremiah, you know, being on minerals for the last 4 years and what's been going on, and we've just proposed, I call it the tolling statute, which it should hopefully get us to a point where we can have a gas to liquids facility, although the current change in oil prices may change those economics yet again. But that's part of the reason for that legislation this committee will see eventually. You know, I see where we are in the planning and the groundwork that's gone into it. You'd made the comment I was glad to hear, and that is maybe we need to start getting a little more focused on something, because I look at a gas to liquids facility being one of the bases, and Wyoming may not be like Canada or Edmonton, like we went up and looked at. We may have several different types of facilities around the state, but one is a gas to liquids. Then you everyone in this committee heard from Don Collins, I don't know, seems like a week or two ago, but it was a couple of days ago. And some of the interesting things with the School of Energy Resources, which all play off of themselves. And I just want to ask you, should we, we're all going to be down here again for a couple of months, is it now time to start really looking at and maybe putting together a more comprehensive plan around that idea?
Go ahead, Jeremiah.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, are you focusing in on a specific asset that we need to follow?
Go ahead.
I think Mr. Chairman and Jeremiah, is what synergies can we bring together? I mean, do we have, and I'll just say the economic stimulation in place to get one of those facilities to commit, and then what else is logical to tack onto that to grow into that? Coupled with what Chairman Harshman said is, can we find a location, and do we need to start getting down that path of pre-permitting? What can we do to move that along? And in my mind, from what I've seen over the last 4 years, is we're ready to start putting a plan together there. We've got enough. We can start sketching something in. And I'm just asking you, have you thought along those lines? We haven't had a chance to discuss it. But
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what I think we're trying to do with the tolling bill, is to put the piece, the last remaining piece in place for them to secure the investment to build those facilities in the state. And it's great to see that. I'm hopeful that out of the legislative session that we will see perhaps one or more facilities immediately proposed as a result, whether that be here in Cheyenne or Casper. There are proposals for both areas. What I'm not certain about at this point in time is that the base asset that we would then build, say, an industrial park around? But I still think we need to do this because we're looking at, for me, beyond just industrial parks, but also at value added and what other synergies might exist between those facilities and other value adds that we can put in place.
Further? Committee, any other questions? Randall Stubbs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Jeremiah. And, you know, looking forward, it looks like, and I just want to make sure, you know, as I wander around our community, I've had people grab me really interested in the state's efforts in this area, wanting to make sure that they're at least on the radar or that people know what there is to offer. And I'm assuming that as this process goes forward, there will be that outreach to communities, allowing them to come forward with sort of their pitch on the assets they have to focus on these efforts. Is that the plan?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. At this point in time, we have not focused in on a specific region that a large park should be established. As I mentioned in the information gathering phase, we intend to put out formal outreach in form of perhaps a request for information for them to submit to us
relative to the assets that they have and the potential that exists there. As I mentioned, I have been to Sweetwater County. I'm happy to go to other places. I will actually be meeting with the County Commissioners Association and municipalities when they meet during the legislative session, so a lot of outreach to come.
Go ahead, Representative Greer.
And as everyone knows, you know, my district, we just want to raise barley and sugar beets, so we're comfortable with that. But as I look around, you know, we get some competing interests from some different regions, and I just want to make sure that we're not looking maybe just solely at one industrial park. It could very well be the case that we go with a couple of smaller parks that have or that are in different parts of our state. I mean, I know we've got our coal resource, our rare earth minerals up in the northeast corner, good gas everywhere, but have you've been considering that all along as you're putting this together?
Mr. Chairman, as much as it's important to think about the industrial park, it's extremely important for me that we think about the value add. And when I think about your region of the state, I think about can we just twist a pipeline, a CO2 pipeline, up into that basin and take advantage of the 800 million to 2.2 billion barrels of oil?
Yeah,
that's
it's 910 million.
About 900. Yeah. I want to ensure that we get pipelines to those areas and that becomes a value add for us, taking CO2 and utilizing it. And that's where, you know, ITC and other things come into play. So every part of the state has some benefit that they can offer to this sort of an approach.
Okay. Anything else, committee? Anything else? Jeremiah, one of the things that, and you and I have had this discussion, I think it's so critical, it's timing and markets. And, of course, the timing for a lot of our projects was a year or two ago, and the things have changed. The whole energy outlook is just like LNG. Everybody talking about the price of oil, but the hidden thing there is this really is hurting LNG, and there was I can't remember, somebody in the last week or so had a $10 or $12 billion LNG. They just completely walked away. Now the gas that we were looking at for an LNG terminal to take to Asia was, instead of being $14, $15 a MCF, is down around 8 or 9 or 10 because of oil being down. So there's all kinds of dynamics. The thing that we always seem to do as government is when the opportunity's there and we're ready to go, we just never can quite get it done. Same with uranium. When uranium was $130 a pound, we couldn't get permits. We couldn't do this. We couldn't do that. So out of what we're doing now in terms of this whole energy strategy, what part is that component playing in your discussions? And I was at that one meeting, and of course that's a big issue for a lot of people in terms of getting permits. I mean, you've got an oil well that's ready to produce, but you want to put a gas engine on it, and yet you can't have an air quality permit for a year to start it up to start producing, those kinds of things. What do you think about that area? To me, that's as critical as anything.
Mr. Chairman, it absolutely is perhaps one of the most critical pieces that we can get, whether it's the regulatory schemes in place or that we know we have the land use constraints addressed for something like this to happen, and that will be certainly on my mind. I do want to say, you know, it takes vision for us to start something like this, and we will have a good approach, I believe, at the end of this year for us to move forward. And if we're looking at something like the Industrial Heartland Center, they didn't get there overnight. It's actually been 50 years in the making, but it really was action that they took in the 90s that spurred the $30 billion in investment that they've had since that time. So this will take us time, but I'm very optimistic that we can get a roadmap in place for us to address a lot of those issues.
You know, and the way to track that, Jeremiah, is with the Minerals Committee, and Representative Greer is on that committee. And, like, Mike, how many bills does the committee have dealing with permitting issues, which is where we should be concentrating? I'm not sure if you have many of those on the agenda, but that's certainly something we need to be thinking about. And the only way you know you're doing something if we have bills to try to mitigate that impact.
Mr. Chairman, really this year, probably the only permitting bill, and this is ancillary, but is dealing with becoming an agreement state, which just makes permitting easier for the uranium industry. you know, looking back, we really just done a few things here. So we've put some timelines, as you're aware of, Mr. Chairman, speeding up permitting through DEQ, but we really have not, or the Minerals Committee has not looked at what can we do to pre-permit an area or lay that groundwork. So that is an area we really should put a little thought into.
We want to do that, and I remember in a couple of legislatures on this committee sponsored bills about gravel pits, and I'm looking at one of them, and you know, there really was a positive impact because of those two bills to the state. So those are the kind of things that I really want to see us move along on. You've got your budget that we had in the budget bill, and it says the 1 million energy strategy says expended by governor's office. Does that mean you spent it on page or on slide 9? I hope you haven't, all of it.
Mr. Chairman, at this time we have not spent that $1 million. I believe that is...
What's the expended by governor's office mean, and what is that? What are you telling me?
Mr. Chairman, I might have to go back to Sean Reese, who originally put this slide together, but I believe it's for expenditures from the governor's office towards energy strategy initiatives, and it doesn't have some of the constraints that the other funds do relative to engagement with the legislative.
You know what would be nice, and if you've given a broad overview, if you could maybe, for the new committee, is just not spend a lot of time on it, Jeremiah, but go through this list that was in that footnote and just say where we are and how much we've spent, kind of the where we stand, if you could do that.
Mr. Chairman, in terms of the administration, we've spent just a little bit of that money. Right now I'm in the process of trying to find somebody that could help us to go through this and sort of administer the activities. As you know, I've got quite a full plate, and I want to make sure that this moves forward. So we'll be using some of that funding for that process.
And give that to us. And the Oversight Committee, has our Legislative Oversight Committee met lately? We haven't even done that, have we?
Mr. Chairman, in my new position, you have not met, but I'm open
that's our
to
fault.
Engaging with you at any point in time.
Yeah, and that's not your fault. That's our fault.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Reverend Greer.
You know, that's a good point, is if we're going to do this right, we've got to have somebody get the information put together and organize it, categorize it, and prioritize it. And the fact of the matter is, through the years on the Minerals Committee and the ideas that flow through, you lose some of those. You chase off on a tangent, forget to go follow up on it, come back. And, our trip to the Pacific Rim, just for the group that went with that, just getting back together and putting down what we had learned, what we need to do better, took us at least a month to get back together on it. And, you know, there's only so many hours in the day with all of our duties. If we're going to be serious about it, we need to make sure we've got somebody paying attention to it if we really want to get this off the ground.
Okay. Anything else, committee? Will you be having any legislation possibly or anything coming up between now and the end of the session that we might be anticipating, or we're pretty much on track and we're moving ahead?
Mr. Chairman, as it relates to this very issue, I would say the only thing that fits is the tolling legislation that will come out of joint minerals.
Yep.
Beyond that, not at this time.
Okay. All right. Nothing else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas. Appreciate your hard work. Okay, committee, we're about on schedule. Don.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your inbox, I have a handout number 41, which just illustrates, for the record, my name is Don Richards, LSO staff. Picking up on a discussion that we started Monday morning, with respect to the state's available revenues, Craig will be meeting on January 6th to revise our October estimate. The page before you, handout number 41, illustrates some of the impacts of the reduction in oil prices. For the committee's recollection, our estimate for calendar year 15 for natural gas, which is not included on the handout, is $4.30 per MCF.
As we look outside today, it looks like good driving weather for folks to get home. Unfortunately, gas is selling at $3.60 an MCF, and it's approaching the beginning, if not first part of winter. Today on the WTI, West Texas Intermediate crude is selling at $55 to $56 per barrel. That's before the differential for Wyoming crude. The handout before you does not include any impacts on production or on sales and use tax. Both of those are closely correlated to oil price. They may lag, meaning it may take some time for producers to curtail their production, and fewer sales and use tax moving through the system, but they are usually closely correlated. Calendar year 2014, the Craig Group has estimated $87 per barrel. Fiscal year 15 and 16 are $85 and $86 per barrel. In terms of growth of production, Craig will meet its estimate or come very close to it in terms of production for calendar year 2015, or 2014, rather. Calendar year 2015, we have estimated a 6% increase, followed by a 4%, 3%, and 2% increases in calendars 16, 17, 18, and 19. So the good news. First of all, the state has a very strong balance sheet. We have a number of accounts for savings and various reserve accounts. The Craig Group is relatively conservative in their estimates, and one example of that is not including capital gains in our investment returns. The first 3 months, which is actually all we have in terms of actual productions of both commodities of coal, oil, gas, sales tax, investment earnings, we're on target. For the first 6 months of the calendar year, it looks like we will be at about $72 per barrel average over the calendar year 2015 or 2014. So we're not that far off in terms of this immediate term. However, the sobering reality is, as discussed earlier today, the coal lease bonus funds go away, and there's a near-term concern of the absence of federal sales, and there's a significant concern regarding the lack of ongoing current revenues driven by the decline in oil prices over the past 3 months. We've essentially experienced a 50% decline from $107 a barrel to $55 per barrel, a 50% decline, whether you look at the Texas price or the Wyoming price. So walking through the handout, I've just created four scenarios there for you, and going from rosy to less rosy. Scenario four is the least rosy, but I wouldn't argue that scenario four is a doomsday at all. If you look at that, we have calculated what we know through calendar year 14. So even though it says $80, we've adjusted that a little bit for the last 6 months being worse off than the first 6 months. And 2015, basically what we're saying there is if life continues as it is today, that's not really a doomsday, it's just a continuation of today's prices, you can expect $220 million loss to the general fund and budget reserve for this biennium, the biennium for which you are will mark up a supplemental budget request.
Now, on that point, Don, that's not one-time money. That's ongoing revenues for your basic ongoing expenditures, correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Now, there in all of our scenarios, we assume some bounce back. Yep. It's a question of when and how long and how quickly those prices rebound. On the far right of the page, you can see there is a very similar impact to the school foundation program, both based upon two sources, federal mineral royalties as well as the assessed valuation 43 mills. You can see that the impact is extremely muted, however, because of the delay. There is a delay in assessed valuation. The production occurs, then the assessed value, and then the payments are made in really two fiscal years after the price decline. So you can see in fiscal year 15, the only decline is experienced in federal mineral royalties. In fiscal year 16, you have that decline in federal mineral royalties and the beginning of a decline in assessed valuation. But if you were to take this graphic out to 17-18, you would see similar negative numbers for the school foundation program that you're experiencing in the 15-16 biennium with respect to the general fund BRA account. Now, perhaps we're not as bad. You know, perhaps it's just scenario number one, that there will be a price rebound. It will be relatively soon, and it will bounce back quickly. However, before leaving today, I wanted to at least advise the committee that scenario four or at least three are certainly not out of the realm of reasonable possibilities. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions. Senator Meyer.
Don, I'm looking back at the January Governor's Rec Craig status, and we had about $3,312,000,000. So if we have scenario four, I guess we'd just be we'd have about $3.1 billion rather than $3.3 billion. Is that kind of the correct way to put those numbers in the goldenrod?
Mr. Chairman, it is in general. I would just quibble with the starting point. We actually show on the front page of Craig or of the profile about 3.6, and that does include the carryover, the 5% carryover. But you're exactly right. You just take 220 or 150 or 132 right off the top. And then on the school foundation program, you can see we had $75 million in unspent revenues before any consideration of an external cost adjustment. So any of these scenarios wouldn't eat up all of that $75 million. I would make one additional note that the model will also be updated in early January, and our enrollments are higher than we expected. So that could eat into that $75 million in unspent funds as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Ross.
So I guess I'm just wondering, Don, as we come into this supplemental budget in January, I expect, of course, we'll have a new Craig report. Based on what I'm seeing here, we're probably going to see something going down. What the effect is on the goldenrod for or potential for what may or may not even be available in this supplemental budget.
Go ahead, Don.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ross, this third column here, the minus 132, minus 141, minus 183, gives a flavor for what the actual reductions would be in the profile. Now, I'm only one member of Craig. I don't know which scenario they will pick or that sort of thing. And I think there are some small pockets of positive news. For example, interest and dividends are likely exceeding our expectations. Not to the tune that this would change materially, but it might help out $10, $20 million. Sales and use taxes are running somewhat ahead of the forecast, so it may mute this. So, you know, just hypothetically, if you took scenario number three and got a little bit of help from sales taxes and interest, it might knock that down to 160, 150. But you're exactly right. You would have somewhere $150, $200 million less revenue when you come to mark up your budget.
Okay, committee, any other questions? Any other questions? One thing, too, and, you know, what you do with oil is you follow the rigs. And just a for instance, in Sublette County, in the Pinedale Anticline there, when they had about 50 rigs running, their tax sales tax revenues were at a certain level. When the gas prices went down, those rigs moved. Fortunately, they moved to the southern PRB, so you saw a 25% drop in Sublette County in terms of their sales tax revenue, and Converse saw a 25% increase. But I'm reading numbers that they're thinking, and this is all, it's not a panic mode right now. I don't think we panic. I think we just got to be smart. But they're talking about 600 rigs will be laid over in the next 2, 3, 4 months. Now, most of those will be in the more expensive plays, you know, in the Bakken, which will help us on the differential, by the way. They'll be in the Eagle Ford down in Texas, not the Marcellus, that's mostly gas. But that's really interesting, and if you see the rig count in Wyoming, I think it's, what, 75 maybe, I'm guessing, Don? And for every rig that's running, you can just, it's about, I think they say 100 jobs is what the one rig creates. So if we lose 20 rigs, you know, you're looking at some impact there. There again, I don't think we're in a panic mode, but it's just something for this committee to consider. And the worst part about this, these are monies that will, just like Senator Meyer talks about, it's a goldenrod right off the top. When will that Craig report be presented to the full legislature in the state? What's the date on that, Don?
Mr. Chairman, I suspect it'll be either the end of your first week or like the Monday of your second week of session, immediately prior to markup.
Before markup. That's a good idea.
Right. Yeah. That's actually what, Mr. Chairman, that's what the dates are set for. So the October report is to inform the governor's recommendations when he's making those in November. And the reason why Craig meets in January is to give the legislature the latest available information. And again, I think Chairman Bebout says this accurately. This was not meant to, you know, throw cold water on anything. It was just meant as a expectation that oil prices are substantially lower than our current estimate.
Well, and not to beat an old record, but some of us remember before, and I've been talking about this for a couple of years, mostly I was worried about volumes, and that we all knew the price of oil would go down, and it's just, it has, and the question is how long. It just takes one geopolitical event, and it'll pop back up in a hurry. But if it doesn't, I can tell you that, you know, it's all about market share and the OPEC, and they're not going to have a meeting until June, so you for sure could be looking at 6 months, but who knows? But it's not a panic. The other good news, and this is really the good news, is this committee and the legislature and the governor have put ourselves in a position we can deal with this. We are ready and we're positioned. We can deal with it and still provide the services. We may not be able to give everybody all the money they want, and that's going to be up to the new committees, but we're in pretty good shape considering a lot of states. I saw Alaska, they're taking a $3.6 billion hit already. It's going to be interesting. Okay, committee, any other questions of Don? Don, what else do we have for any cleanup or anything else?
Mr. Chairman,
Burkhart, just a second. Go ahead, Don.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a real quick question, Don, because I can never remember these numbers. I have a piece of paper to write them down on now. You've used the number of how much, say, a $10 change in oil is worth on state income and in gas. Can you repeat those numbers for me, please?
Why don't you get that out to us?
It's all in the data book, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
You know, because the price, you know, used to be $1 an MCF was $300 million. But now gas has dropped down, so it's not nearly as huge. Any other questions of Don? Don, anything else we need to do?
Just a quick cleanup. For those of you who are leaving, we do like to keep your budgets and your handouts, if you're willing to provide those to your incoming members.
I don't want them to know what we did.
If not, if you have personal notes, we will swap those out appropriately. That's fine. But if possible, if you're willing to leave your hard copy, that's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I just, we have, before you guys leave, we have a little tradition here. We have an outgoing chairman.
Oh.
The JAC. Oh. All right. And so, I just want to, you better have a seat because this is going to take a little bit. Senator Bebout, this stuff had to get written down because it's just too much. But I'll just go through some of the committees. And it's really